Hello, everyone, and welcome back to episode 100 of the Samaja
Woohoo!
and Crotty Sports podcast. For any nitpickers, it might be episode 101 to you since we did a two-parter around NFL draft time, but this is episode 100. We make the rules, you don't. You got to deal with it. So, welcome in. Episode 100, a milestone episode. Didn't do anything special in terms of a special guest, but there wasn't anything like we could have got a Celtics guest, but like there wasn't anything screaming like, oh, we need a guest for this. Like this would be a really good occasion. We can just wrap up the unfortunate end of the Celtics season, but no doubt we might have some guests through the off season for the Bruins and Celtics. Definitely possible. Keep posting on that. But episode 100, no jersey numbers. We're done with those. So I'm not leading up with that.
Need a new shtick.
Yeah, we'll figure it out along the way. All right. Ryan, how you doing?
Not bad. Like you said, little, still discouraged. I'll say I'm more discouraged now. I've had some, obviously some time to reflect on the Celtics, the finals. If we did the show the night of the finals, or even the day after, I think I'd probably be a little bit more, in the terms of anger, maybe towards Jason Tatum. I know I told some people I was going to come on here and potentially rip Jason Tatum tonight for his performances, but I don't think I'm going to do that because I think I'm going to try to take the positives away from the Celtics. And again, as we talked about, just like they weren't projected to make the finals 4.5 months ago, whatever that is, when they were, like we said, I think on last week's show, that they were, you know, the 11th seed, and then to get to the finals was just a great ride. So a little discouraged because of that. Obviously, we have some Red Sox stuff to talk about, so maybe that will lighten things up a little bit because they're playing a little better of late. And then some hockey stuff as well. I know that I didn't even know this, that the NHL awards were announced last night until I woke up this morning, to be honest. So I know there's some stuff there that we want to touch on, and maybe there's some people that you think should have won some awards that didn't, and or just your overall thoughts on that. But I'm doing pretty good. Can't complain too much.
Yeah, it's something we kind of expected with the Celtics, so it's not like, you know, if we both expected them to win and predicted them to win the finals at the point of last recording, it'd be a little different. But it just got to a point where it felt like it was the Warriors series and it ended up being the Warriors series, unfortunately. But we do have a lot to get to today, you know, even though the Celtics and the Bruins are both now officially in offseason mode. We do have a little bit of Red Sox stuff, some stuff from around the world of sports, and, you know, much more. So we will start with moments of the week. For me, as I typically do, I pick a few. Pat's jerseys, I mean, immediately the best jersey in the league with the red jerseys. I think we can both agree there. And you can totally call me biased because I am biased and it is true at the same time. That's not up for discussion. They just are. They're perfect. They're perfect football jerseys. It's a tier 5, great move. Something they could have done years ago. They finally did, and I'm very excited about. John Wall. This guy, I mean, is going to make, let me do the quick math here, 79, 123, like $171 million and playing 40 games potentially.
Over the last, what, four seasons? Is that what, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's, Jesus well, Christ. That's going to be, you know, it's going to be impacted by how much he plays or doesn't play this year. But in the past three seasons, he's played 40 games. And depending on what he does this season, he's going to make that total over the last 4 years around like $171, $172 million, which is crazy. You just got to respect it. You got to respect it because part of it was them not playing him because they didn't, you know, they wanted to do bad. I think that's pretty clear. Injury troubles as well. You know, there's no doubting that, but it's just on the surface with the whole, like, making so much money for barely doing anything is awesome. If he was just some bum, like, I'd be probably having a little bit of different tone, but like, it's John Wall. Like, the guy's had a pretty good career overall before all this. And I can't say shit happens from the sense like this happens a lot, this type of situation, but shit happens. And, you know, part of it is on the Rockets as well. It's not like all on him. So your thoughts on the patch jerseys, I'm sure I echoed that or got them out there pretty well. I think we're in the same boat.
Yeah, that's
John Wall situation.
The Pats jerseys, I didn't put it in the outline, but I'm good that you did because I was gonna just throw it in for when we jumped over to mine. My moments of the week, I was because that obviously got dropped today. Great announcement the way they did it too with the Back to the Future tie, and I thought that was pretty cool to have a couple of Patriots jump into the DeLorean. I think it was Kendrick Bourne, David Andrews, and I think Matt Judon and maybe Slater was in that as well. So good to see that. But yeah, I'm in the same boat you are. Like, this was a long time coming. Obviously, love the jerseys when they had them originally. Can't remember how many years ago that was. Brady is off. It was pumped. I saw on Twitter. He, I think, retweeted the video. It had like a let's go or like a pump up thing to go along with it. So that was pretty cool to see him still showing some love for the Patriots. Obviously, the John Wall thing is just, like you said, it's comical at this point. Like, again, you mentioned it, like the Rockets won a tank, so they didn't play him at all last year. He's dealt with injuries over the last few seasons, dating back to when he was even with the Wizards. So you can't really knock the guy here. I don't blame him for opting back in. Like, he was not going to get anywhere close to $7.3 million in the open market this offseason. I was listening to Zolak and Bertrand today. And it's funny you brought up John Wall, because some idiotic caller called in and said maybe the Celtics should call up Houston and see if maybe they'll make a trade for John Wall, which everyone shot down immediately, rightfully so, because John Wall is, I think, past his prime. Unless he pulls an Al Horford and he's, you know, this entire year off of rest, he comes back and plays well. But that's a guy that is money-wise at this point in his career, don't want anything to do with. But if he wants to continue to cash checks and just kind of chill on the bench, then all the power to him.
Yeah, I mean, that's really it, to be honest.
Yep.
Like, you got to just kind of respect it, unless you just don't like
Oh, absolutely.
You don't have fun with it, which, I mean, why wouldn't you?
Plus, he's got a dance move that everyone likes.
For some reason. That's true.
The John Wall. Yep.
Thirdly, Brooks Koepka can't figure out who he is. Like, this guy...
What do you mean by that?
He's got all the hair dye shit he's done. Like, he's got comments saying, like, he just, like, can't figure out his identity, I feel like. I feel like he was just kind of... He was, like, not as good as he used to be.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of seemed like a guy that just liked the competitiveness and being around the PGA. And now he's just jumping to the LIV Tour.
He's jumping to the LIV thing. We won't get into the LIV thing too much, but...
Bryson DeChambeau, who he hates, supposedly.
I can't figure Brooks Koepka out.
I can't figure him out. That's my point overall.
I think he's just become a troll at this point. Like, I think he's doing that in part because DeChambeau went over there. Like, I think that has to factor in. Like you said, maybe like he's kind of. Yeah, I think so. Just to get in his head a little bit, maybe see if he can, you know, steal a win or two from him. But
I mean, they do get a ton of money, so I can't really blame them.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I haven't been following the politics of the whole thing. Exactly. I haven't followed it too closely, but that's kind of my consensus as well. And I've talked to my grandfather about this numerous times. He feels the same way, that like they're going over there because it's a lot of guys that seem to be over the hill a little bit. Not saying that Brooks Koepka is completely over the hill or DeChambeau either, but it's, you know, among the older guys that don't think they can compete with, you know, the younger guys in the PGA, guys like we saw in the US Open this previous week, weekend rather. So yeah, I can't fault him in the slightest for going over there. It's just that group or whatever you want to call it is throwing an absurd amount of money at everybody that plays for that that organization. So again, it's kind of like the John Wall thing, all the power to him. Like, it's going to ruffle some feathers a little bit. It has. I can't necessarily say I blame the golfers that are on the PGA that are upset with it. But again, like you said, we're not going to get too much into the politics because it's just kind of ridiculous with a bunch of the stuff that's been thrown around.
At the same time too, like, good golfers leaving makes it easier for you in the PGA to win. So
that's
like,
true.
That's good. Yeah, it's just, I don't know. Brooks Koepka loses me more and more with time. Just strange. Just a strange guy. But I'm glad the rumors about Morikawa going over are true, because that would have been a big loss. I like Morikawa a lot. I heard those rumors, and I don't know a lot about him personally. I've heard him on Pardon My Take once or twice. He seems like a great guy. I would have been surprised to see him go over. He doesn't seem like the type of guy to do that. I'm glad he isn't. For now, he could change his mind, but I'm glad. I want, you know, a face of the PGA still. Like, there's still some good faces in the PGA, but I think Morikawa, a guy who will probably get better with time, I imagine.
I would think so, yeah.
Guy to be, like, the pinnacle of the PGA, like him, Justin Thomas, Rory McIlroy. So, yeah, those are some of the big three. There's obviously others, but the whole LIV and PGA thing is interesting. But like I said, we're not going to get into the politics because, you know, there's not a lot of great backing to Saudi Arabia. They do some bad things over there, and we don't want to, you know, dwell on that too much because, yeah, it's just not what we do on the podcast.
Not doom and gloom.
Yeah, we're not doom and gloom, and there's stuff about that, those things we don't know too, so we don't want to overstep or potentially get things wrong. It's just not worth it. No. So, if definitely interesting scenario. Like, it's gonna be funny to monitor Brooks and Bryce and over there. So we'll see what happens. But speaking of golf, your moment of the week is about Grayson Murray.
Yeah, we're doubling down on golf on the show. Probably talking golf for the first time ever on the podcast, maybe just in general.
Yeah, since we talked about it very minimally.
Have we? I can't remember a time that at Merrimack at times, or even.
Like, yeah, okay. At times. Not a lot, right. Though. Like, not a lot at all. Right.
I'll take your word for it. But this will be the time that we really dive into it and get to the nitty gritty of golf and everything. Obviously, people that follow golf, the U.S. Open was close to home last weekend in Brookline. Obviously, congratulations to Matt Fitzpatrick for winning it. But my focus, like you said, is on Grayson Murray, who, if people watched it, Grayson Murray might not be the most household name. And when he, I think, finished the tournament, yeah, he was plus 18. It might not be the most household name, but it's what he did on the golf course rather than how he played. If people missed it, like I said, he triple bogeyed the seventh hole, I believe, on Sunday. Proceeded to toss his putter, like tomahawk the thing into the fescue that was on the golf course. And then the 10th hole, he decided to snap one of his irons over his knee after he shanked his second shot into the rough. Again, you know, there's some people, there's a golf purist that'll sit there and say that, you know, oh, that's bad for the game. You can't have that. I think Grayson Murray, he didn't necessarily apologize. He kind of was like, there's people that get mad at me for wearing my emotions on my sleeve. Like, I don't know, they go pound sand, basically, I guess what he was saying.
It'd be different if he like screamed at somebody or like hit
somebody. Yeah, I took it out on, yeah, or like destroyed the course or something. But like, yeah, he broke his own club. He tossed his putter into a bunch of like weeds. Like, upright, yeah. But I just found it great because I mean, it makes me feel great about my shitty golf game when, you know, I saw something like that. I'm like, wow, the pros can even look horrible at times. Maybe it's not just, you know, me having, you know, shanks left and right out there, but I just found it funny. And then, like I said, I saw that he issued not like a statement or anything, but tweeted something out. About, you know, his emotions running high, which I'm like, all for it, man. Like, if I saw more professionals doing that, I'd be like, wow, golf's actually, you know, interesting to watch. You know, a guy misses maybe a 5-foot putt, he might lose his mind and whip his putter into a pond or something. I don't know. Like, I think you need a little bit, like you said, basketball needs more enforcers. I think golf needs more meltdowns and freakouts from here and or there. Because I think, I mean, again, the golf purists, if there's any listening, will argue like it's not good for the game, but like, I think something like this was all over Twitter on Sunday when it happened. I think it caught people's eyes and, you know, maybe you get some more younger viewers to watch golf. I know I was, like I said, interested in it just to see what the hell the reason was that he freaked out so badly.
Yeah. So much is about social media. So like there's pros here for sure. Me personally, if I like ever got to the point where I needed to snap an iron, I don't think I would do it because I'd be embarrassed if I couldn't do it.
Exactly. Yeah, you go
do, like, what if it like couldn't. Rips your pants or something, or like you like jab yourself with a metal
and you look like an idiot.
And then you potentially get hurt, like nobody wants that. It's golf. How do you get hurt in golf? It's pretty hard.
What'd you do to yourself? I snapped my club over my knee and stabbed me. I shanked myself with my 8-iron. Like, not great.
I thought my upper thigh was the ball out of range. It tried to hit it sideways. That was pretty funny. It was overall a pretty solid round two. We're not going to go into like a breakdown or anything, but a pretty solid
absolutely
US
not.
Open. I enjoyed it. Enjoyed the end of it on Father's Day as well. It was fun. And congrats to Matt Fitzpatrick. Wonder if he's the first winner to ever have braces, but he's won two events at that course now. So
Yeah, absolutely great. Good for him. Obviously likes playing there. Like, who knows? Maybe he'll play there more and win some more some tournaments left and right, but who knows?
Yeah, it looks like he's probably got a decent future ahead of him, but you know, you never
I'd say so.
He looks pretty young too, so that he's got youth on his side, I think. But I don't know his exact age off the top of my head. Unfortunately, we do have some sad news. Caleb Swanigan, 25, former NBA player, former Purdue Boilermaker. I remember watching the March Madness. Died of what we know now, last I checked, of natural causes at the age of 25. He just turned 25 like a month ago, I believe. Just horrible. He was such a beast at Purdue. I never really saw much of him in the NBA, as I don't watch much basketball at all, if any. outside of the anything involving the Celtics. Just really tough to see yesterday in the news. You know, there's not a whole lot we can talk about more outside of the tragedy itself, because we don't know, you know, the cause of death besides natural causes, if anything else was involved. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, another young athlete, Jalen Ferguson, 26 years old, unknown cause of death, dead at 26. Just brutal. Two talented athletes dying too young.
Mm-hmm.
Just brutal. Ferguson was a third round pick in 2019 of the Baltimore Ravens. Just two athletes, two young men gone way too soon. And we like to send our condolences and strength and well wishes to family and loved ones, because it's just two terrible situations that you just never, ever want to see.
Yep. I think you've said it perfectly there. Not much to add. I was just trying to look up, because I was curious too, because I recognized the name of the Caleb Swanigan when it came up the other day, just to see. I think, like, I think you said it, drafted with Portland, played for Sacramento, hadn't played since 2020, I believe, was his last year in the league, 22. So guy that had a, obviously, like, a bright future. Just obviously things don't work out from time to time, but we're not going to, again, get into anything like that. Like, that's just not appropriate at the time. But yeah, like you said, tough, not, I don't know, not like happy stuff, obviously, we would talk about here.
Yeah. It's really unfortunate. Like I said, we want to send our best wishes and condolences and strength to the families and loved ones of Ferguson and Swanigan. Just terrible situations.
Mm-hmm.
On to Celtics. It's
trying to transition. Yeah.
It wasn't great for the Celtics. It kind of felt like a bad omen with how 4-5 went. Then mm-hmm. it was game 6, 103-90 at home. If there was a preferable way to lose, it was on the road, but
they prefer to lose it in Golden State. Yep.
Yeah. But
I think if there was
get it done, just couldn't get it done.
Yeah. I think if there was a preferable way to lose, it wouldn't be, as we talked about before, I said it, I think when we did the show last week, like if you lose the finals, I think like you mentioned just a minute ago, game 4, you look back at that one and that's going to be the sour note. Cause you had that game when you were about 5 minutes away from going up 3-1 in the NBA finals. And even I think Steve Kerr said it, you know, when he was interviewed either after the game or during the parade or whatever they had the other day. I think he pretty much said that the Celtics had Golden State on the ropes and Golden State was able to, you know, with help from the Celtics, obviously we talked about it, claw their way back into the series and, you know, end up winning the finals. I don't know. Game 6 was such a frustrating game because it started – like I went to a couple of friends of mine's house and watching the game, and we were psyched because of how great it started off. You know, they go on a 14-2 run to open up the game. Tatum's hitting early shots. We said that. Like, it would be nice to see him get going early. He did. Didn't do anything afterwards. I'll get to him a little later. You know, Jaylen Brown, I had it here. Props to him, Horford, and Rob Williams really stepping up. Jaylen Brown played his best game in the finals from a scoring standpoint, 34 points, tried to keep the Celtics in it. I didn't even realize this. I was looking it up, just trying to find stuff to talk about today on the outline. Had probably his most balanced scoring attack of the postseason. He had 7 points in the first and second quarters, 10 points in the third and fourth. So obviously played to the final whistle. It seemed like he played pretty much the entire second half, except for like the final minute when obviously Ime Udoka waved the white flag. Al Horford, what he was able to do. We said it all playoffs at 36 or 35 going in, 36 now, I think. He was really the one reason the Celtics were in the game. You know, he was excellent in that third quarter, helped out, scored 12 of his 19 points, hit 3 of his 4 threes for the game, had 14 rebounds as a whole. He really left it all out there on the floor. And then a guy, you know, we talked about here and there, Rob Williams, I thought he played one of his better games of the playoffs, of the finals. He was a guy that looked like he was, you know, ready to go, ready to give it his all from the tip, 10 points, 7 rebounds, 5 of them were offensive. There were a couple of offensive trips that he saved with those rebounds, 5 blocks as well. He was everywhere. Just again, major props for Rob Williams going out there with obviously the injury, playing through that, playing through pain. Celtics Rally on Twitter had a good stat. I thought Robert Williams in the 2022 playoffs, he had 25 missed shots and 38 blocked shots. So we talked about it throughout the playoffs as is that, you know, when he was out there, he was a beast. He was a game changer. Golden State kind of tweaked some things throughout the finals to, you know, get some shots over him. Steph, I think, started taking a lot more higher floaters when he got into the paint. I think Klay Thompson did it a couple times too, just to get over Rob Williams. They kind of figured him out a little bit as the series went on. But like I said, major props to those three guys for stepping up. Really, in my opinion, looked like the only three guys at times that wanted to be out there. because Marcus Smart really struggled at times. I thought, honestly, he gave up towards the end of that game. His fourth quarter was one of the worst I've seen Marcus Smart play in a while. The bench was not good. We'll get into them in a second. Like I said, Jason Tatum, as much praise as he got to the playoffs, it was rightfully deserved because he was excellent for the first couple rounds. Only had a couple of games that, you know, he really struggled in here and there. Never really got it going in the finals. And I know a lot of people have talked about this over the last couple of days. Like when you're an all-NBA player, an all-star, you know, you want to be the label of the superstar, like I labeled him throughout these playoffs. You got to perform better than you did in the finals, especially in an elimination game, game six, you know, win or go home. And just the game he had was, at least to me, inexcusable. I don't know if you feel the same way about Tatum. If you feel as strong, like I said, I don't want to rip on him too much because you look at everything. And again, like he's only 24, first time in the finals. Guy was playing in just an insane amount of minutes. I'll get into that in a little later. But just kind of your overall thoughts, what you thought just, you know, in game six alone or just the last three games, like you mentioned, kind of went wrong for this team.
Yeah, the biggest storyline is Tatum with the 13 points. How much you want to factor in certain things otherwise is, you know, anyone's opinion. Mm-hmm. But me, it just has to be Tatum. Tatum has to be the biggest thing. I'm not like doom and gloom about Tatum like some people are out there.
Yeah, I think that's a little bit of an overreaction that people are like, oh, is he the guy moving forward? Yeah. It's like, again, like there are other factors that made him struggle or had him struggle, but
yeah, like I do have questions about Tatum moving forward, but I'm not like ready to say like, oh, it's over now. Like this is their chance. Like this core, this, you know, especially I'm going to highlight him overall, Brown and Williams, and Marcus Smart's a little older, but they have such a good young core with those three in particular that it'd have to be pretty not colossally bad, but like a pretty big underachievement for them to at least not make like a competitive
one or two finals
in the coming years, like pretty consistently, and or make the finals and win. You know, ideally you want to get to the finals and win, but
yeah, that is the ultimate goal.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, it's you could say this Celtics overachieved. Some people believe that. I get that, and I think they did to an extent, but yeah, I'm not like one of these people like, oh, like Jason Tatum is back to normal. Like he can't show up in the big games, but not that he was like, I think Tatum definitely needed to get over a hump and he did, but you know, at times he, you know, he couldn't lead the Celtics to the success they saw this year and years past is my point. And that's partially due to the, you know, the way the team is built this year and compared to past years, but that's a whole nother discussion. Yeah, I mean, when it comes down to the simplest terms, though, I mean, 13 points just isn't good enough from your best player. It's not even close to good enough. So he does deserve a lot of criticism, absolutely. But there's context that needs to be provided, and it sucks. But it's not something like terribly surprised to see them go out this way. I had more hope. You know, I hoped they'd win, and gave a prediction of Celtics at 7 at the start, but this isn't, this kind of loss isn't something I'm like terribly surprised by. And I think it's something they can bounce back from. We could see, I think there's a very good chance Jason Tatum wins the MVP next year. I said that like 3 months ago.
I think he should be right in the running. Absolutely.
I think he's going to be right there. He might honestly win it. I gave my prediction saying yes, but you know, I'm not going to just be like, oh, he's going to do it. I'm not going to like shove it down people's throats every week for the off season. That would just be annoying.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have confidence that Jason Tatum will win the MVP next year, though, especially with this to fuel him now. But overall, the team's in a good spot. You know, Al Horford's not going to be around forever. However many good years you get left out of Al is good. But I trust Brad Stevens building this team, whatever he needs to do in the future, to make it work. And it sucks that they lost the way they did, but I have faith for the future. It's not all doom and gloom. It's not all over for me.
Yeah, I think we'll get into the Brad Stevens stuff because I thought he had a lot of interesting comments when he met with the media, kind of his closing thoughts and just remarks on the season as a whole, gave a good indication of what direction the Celtics could head in. There's some people that think, you know, they need a third star to go with Tatum and Brown. Obviously, one name that we've talked about in the past has come up once again, not surprising in the slightest, of Bradley Beal. There's some people, and Brad Stevens seems to be that type of guy that maybe some tweaks is all they need to do. Add a couple of, you know, role pieces here and there. The thing on Tatum I wanted to say, because I kind of forgot my train of thought when I was brought it up, but you mentioned that, you know, you hope something like this kind of fuels him. That was, I think, my main reason why I kind of relapsed and didn't want to go in on him too hard, because I watched, obviously going back and watching his post-game stuff, he looked like a guy that was dead. Like, I'm not saying that, you know, listening to Marcus Smart, he wasn't obviously devastated by the loss or anything, but Tatum had the look of a guy, like, the entire time his interview, you know, head down, shoulders sulking. I saw when Golden State was celebrating, he kind of had the Stephon, I think it was Stephon Diggs, the moment where he was standing off kind of in the corner watching Golden State celebrate. You know, he didn't look all that happy because of that. What'd you say?
There it is. The motorcycles are.
I know. It's once or twice a week. Yeah, it's ridiculous. But no, I mean, I hate to, you know, say, you know, obviously, you know, hope a loss like this is good, but that's kind of where I'm at with Tatum right now. You hope a loss, like you said, like this can fuel him and give him some sort of, you know, anger that maybe teams in the past or people in the past don't think Tatum has or really plays with. You hope, like I said, like a loss like this can fuel him into next season and say, I never want to. I think he said this, that too. It might've been Smart. It was like, I never want to have that feeling again of, you know, what they're feeling right now. So yeah. Like you said, this, you know, it's not all doom and gloom. There are, you know, some things to look forward to with this team. My big thing for the meta, my big takeaway for the finals was just, again, the turnovers. You saw it rear its ugly head in game six, the worst it I'd arguably ever had in the finals. I think Celtics had 22 turnovers in game six to Golden State's 15. As a whole for the finals, Boston finishes with 97 turnovers and 123 points off turnovers. And then the Warriors had 79 with 106. That was my big thing. Like, we talked about it, I think, on air, off air, the amount of times after losses that every player, even Ime Udoka, would sit up there and go, you know, we need to turn the ball over less, you know, we'll make adjustments to doing so, and, you know, be more protective with the ball. And then after every loss, just not doing that. That was my biggest thing. Like, how do you have this happen so many times and really do nothing to prevent it from happening or nothing really to change stuff up? We talked about it, you know, maybe seeing a little bit more Marcus Smart bring the ball up, and he had some bad turnovers in game six, or maybe see a little bit more Derek White as a ball handler and less of Tatum and Brown trying to dribble in traffic. And they just kept going to that type of stuff. Like, it was just frustrating as a whole. Red Sox stats, it was interesting that, you know, that Twitter account was giving you some Celtics stats through games two through six of the finals. Celtics had 112 assists, but 83 turnovers. Like, that's not going to get it done. Like, that was just the biggest thing for me. And watching the game too, just the careless turnovers, you know, throwing the ball where guys aren't, trying to dribble through traffic. Like, that was my biggest thing. Just the inexcusable, like, you know, you're doing these things wrong, but then really, and I mean, maybe that's kudos to Golden State. I keep forgetting. And I think maybe some people have overlooked that they were the number two defense in the NBA for the season. So, like, maybe you'll give more credit to Golden State than maybe people have, but I don't know. Like, we talked about it a lot that I think most of the time when it came to the finals, like, the Celtics maybe beat themselves more than any team had. And again, I don't want to take away from what Golden State did and take away from, you know, the excellent finals that Steph Curry had. And I know maybe we're not going to talk a whole lot about him, but just to give credit where credit's due there. Side note, I'm happy now that we can stop talking about, you know, about his legacy now that the four-time champion, two-time MVP, multiple all-star MVPs, all-stars, like, he had to solidify his legacy with the finals MVP. Like,
that's all it was.
Exactly. I just found that storyline so stupid going into the finals and all throughout it. Like, but I don't know, like, that was, like I said, the turnovers was my biggest thing, that you just could never seem to nix that one little problem, or one obviously massive problem that they had.
Yeah. People are going to find this corny, but, like, in the words of Aerosmith, you got to lose to know how to win.
That is pretty corny, but I get the point you're making, but it's true. In this case, it's very true.
In this case, yeah, it's not true in every, you know, because every sports team, but you do. Like, I think that's what it's going to end up being. I think the Celtics will win a championship in the next few years, and this is going to be a huge rallying point for that. Like, they know what the grind is like. They have the experience. They know, hopefully in the future, how to adapt better and turn the ball over less. You know, especially Tatum, the thing going around, like, he had like over 100 turnovers or something, or 100 on the
dot. Yeah, broke LeBron's record. It's not a record you want to have your name associated with when it comes to LeBron James. Like
I saw his average stats in the finals were like identical to LeBron's average stats in the finals. His first final, so maybe that's a reason for optimism. I guess it's just kind of one of those take it with a grain of salt things, but it is notable to some extent for me. But yeah, I mean, right now with how I feel and how they proved themselves to get here when they really shouldn't have, they really just rallied since January and did it.
Yep.
If they have a more consistently awesome season, like, they're going to do it. Like,
I think, yeah, I think so. And that was Brad Stevens. Big thing too, and that's why I wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, how much
you just froze for like 8 seconds. Why did it do this?
I don't know. It said my internet was
like once a week. I don't know why.
All right, if once a week with the freezing, once a week with the motorcycle, it's a given at this point. You can just bet on those two things happening.
You're the worst. You're fired.
I know. Yep. I gotta get out of here. No, but what I was saying is Brad Stevens kind of talked about that in the minutes played, and you said getting off to, you know, a better start in the season. So that's why I was going to try to transition into the next of, you know, just how much blame should Ime Udoka get? Because obviously it was talked about a lot towards the end of the finals that Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum looked gassed. We talked about it, I think, last show that, you know, they look gassed because they're out there playing so much because they don't have a ton of help in the finals. This was from Red Sox stats too, really quick. Through games two through six of the finals, Tatum and Brown both scored 117 points. Looking at the rest of, you know, the team, Smart scored 73, Horford scored 49, Derek White scored 38, Robert Williams scored 37, Grant Williams scored 25, and Peyton Pritchard scored a whopping 8 points. All of those 8 points came in game one. So we talked about it last show, I'm pretty sure. You got nothing from the bench in games four and five. You got nothing from the bench again in game six, to the point where I think Pritchard was benched for one quarter. Derek White played all of 5 seconds in the third quarter. And just 220 in the second half. Like I want to put some blame on Ime Udoka for, you know, Jason Tatum. He averaged 40.7 minutes per game in the finals. That was the most out of any player. That was the only player in the finals for both teams to average over or 40 minutes or more. But then again, you look at it and it's like he had to obviously play these guys because the Celtics were down a lot, because they needed, you know, their stars to come out and score, and because they just didn't have any help, didn't have any, you know, scoring depth, for, you know, lack of a better, just, you know, how you want to describe it. But I don't know, do you put a lot of the blame on Ime Udoka, or is it kind of the same thing, like he had to do what he had to do because he didn't really have a lot to go off of other than his, you know, main starting five?
Yeah, I think you have to put some blame on Stevens there for, you know, I think okay, the bench overall was good. But when it comes to really rear its ugly head, you have to give some blame on the guy putting the roster together.
Yep, I think so. That's fair.
Stevens a ton, but like, he's definitely worthy of some of the blame there. But overall, Stevens did a pretty marvelous job in his first year in this new role, so I'm not going to like harp on him too much. Udoka does deserve some blame because it just wasn't clicking enough to win games at the end. Like, that's just as simple as it is.
Yep.
But more so with the turnovers, maybe it's, you know, how they were setting things up on offense. But to me, that's the players. That's lack of communication at times, just not thinking. Sometimes you rush these decisions. My thing, it sounds stupid, but like, because it's just so basic, but just simplify the game. Like, every time I see this crap, like, the one thing that comes to my mind is the easiest thing possible for anybody with a brain is simplify the game. Simplify the game. Like, you don't have to make these crazy plays all the time. And they don't do that all the time. They don't always make these, like, Harlem Globetrotters type plays, but it's more so just things you look at and you're like, all right, that was a little risky. Maybe you pull it off. And sometimes you know, pull off a fancy pass or something and it just doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Or like even the one I think I talked about last week when Tatum made that dumb pass over to Williams and Draymond freaking stole it, went for the dunk, and Rob Williams tried to freaking bat the ball through the glass and went down hard, flexing his arm, and could have been done for the rest of the finals. Like, that's the type of shit. Like, obviously, you know, turnovers aren't always gonna lead to like a potential injury, but like, you have to limit that type of stuff, just obviously if you're wanting to win games. And
those are the avoidable ones. Like, there's some turnovers like you can get away, you can't get away with, but like,
Matt asked a good question in the chat, whether we think the Celtics can beat Milwaukee in the playoffs again if Middleton is healthy next year. Of course, part of that will depend on what each roster is looking like.
Exactly. Yep. That's where I'm at right now.
Like, if the Celtics put together a capable team, whether it's pretty similar to this year or not, and Middleton's healthy and whatever the Bucks do, you know, that's all speculatory. Speculative. I think I just made up a word.
I do it all the time, so don't worry about it.
Like, if the Celtics are in a, if the Celtics like are very much like the underdog, I'm not going to say yes, but like if the Celtics are as good as they probably should be next year, like a very big time contender, yeah, I'd say they're going to beat the Bucks next year if they meet in the playoffs, even with Middleton. I'll say that.
Yeah, I think so. I think that it'll be, I mean, it was a shit, it was a close series to begin with. It went seven games, but like,
I think it's going to be really tough to get to stop the Celtics from getting in the finals next year.
I think, yeah, I think so. I think, again, it's, we've talked about it all playoffs. The only thing I think that could stop the Celtics is the Celtics. Like, if they,
that's really it. That's,
if they don't learn from their mistakes last, like, that they made this year, like, then they keep doing the same crap, like you said, the dumb turnovers going into next season, then, like, you're going to have a problem. But it's a shitty answer, and it's not the answer that we're probably looking for here. But, like, you're kind of just in wait and see mode right now to see what both teams do. Because, like, Milwaukee's got some questions. I think I saw right before we jumped on here that Pat Connaughton's going to opt back in with them. So that's a big help for them. I kind of wanted the Celtics to go after him if he were to pry free. But then again, it depends on what the Celtics do. You know, do they want to add that next superstar? Like I said, do they want to just tweak some things? Like who knows?
Yeah, we'll see on that. We can get into that a little bit here towards the end of the Celtics segment and, of course, through the offseason. But anything we want to get to more so before we get to like things we want in the off season?
Not really. The next thing I was just going to kind of, cause like I said, Brad Stevens obviously met with the media, I believe yesterday was Tuesday, right? Yeah. Yesterday. So I thought he had a lot of interesting comments. I wanted to quickly try to run through as many as we could, just maybe give some quick thoughts. Cause again, I thought it gave a good indication of what direction they could be heading in. Cause according, it seems like to Brad Stevens, they're not, at least from, you know, early on, they're not looking to add that third superstar. They're looking to more so just kind of add some minor roster pieces here and there. But Keith Smith, people on Twitter, if they follow him, did a good job of kind of putting a thread together of the biggest things from Brad Stevens, his biggest comments. So I'll start obviously with the big question on where Boston or where Brad Stevens thinks the Celtics need to improve the most. He said, quote, same old deal, draft, develop, and look for deals. We have to walk a fine line a little bit. Teams are fragile, and the way they work together are fragile. When you find an identity, you want to keep that, add to it, but not take away. I don't know. To me, it kind of seemed like it's a fly flying around my room that keeps distracting me. To me, I don't know. It feels like, you know, again, with Brad Stevens, we talked about it when they hired him. It seemed like he was going to take a different approach than Danny Ainge has taken in the past. And I don't want to say this was like a – because it wasn't. It wasn't a shot at Danny Ainge or anything. But to me – it just kind of seemed, like I said, Brad Stevens is more in line with, you know, adding a couple of veteran pieces or maybe some pieces that he thinks fits the roster well, well, rather than, you know, making a big splash, some sort of big deal like the Isaiah Thomas's for Kyrie Irving types of deal, because we saw how well that worked out for team chemistry and stuff like that. So that's kind of where I think he's at with, you know, the fragile comment, not saying that, like, you know, teams are wusses or anything like that, but just like you have to kind of walk, like he said, a fine line of, you know, if we add a big piece here, is that going to take away from some other guys on the roster? You know, if maybe it's better to add some guys that we think can fill certain roles rather than just kind of, you know, go for the big move. I don't know if you feel any different or just kind of if you have the same thoughts.
I kind of feel like they did that a little bit, finding a guy that could fill a role with Derek White, and it didn't work well enough in the end.
Okay. Yep. I think a lot of people share that same kind of sentiment that you do, that like, it was a nice move at the time, but you needed something along with it, like like a Daniel Tice is a nice kind of
that didn't work
bowl move,
no chance it worked,
but it didn't work exactly.
And like there's, you can expect another good season from Al Horford, but like I don't think it's guaranteed.
No, I don't think so. I think you're gonna see a dip
like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I have faith in him, like it's not like I don't.
Mm-hmm.
But he is older too, you know, you can't just like bank on Al being awesome all year. I think
he'll exactly
have a good year probably, but he's getting older and it's not a guaranteed thing. But I get where Stevens is at, but I think in the right scenario, he can make a splash. So
I think it's all about the right,
kind of like teeter-tottering a little bit. It's that stage of the off season. Like,
yeah, it's in, yeah, developmental, like,
especially when they're coming off a finals run that didn't
exactly go
as
like
planned or as hoped. You got to kind of like temper expectations a little bit and let things kind of play out a little bit. But we do have, of course, as I alluded to earlier, some ideas and some hopes. So,
We are slowly making our way to those. The next one, Stevens on the Celtics, just overall needs. Say, quote, a little more scoring off the bench. But I also believe in some of our guys that didn't get to play as much, but we'll explore everything with our trade exceptions, the draft and free agency. For starters, I like that they're going to actually maybe try to use the trade exemptions, because I think one of them, I think the Fournier one is up at some point in this month. So they obviously got to get a move on that. I don't know. Like I think a lot of people's takeaways too, because Brad Stevens mentioned this a couple times, like obviously they expect a little bit more from their role guys and their bench guys. And the name that came up a lot was they expect a little bit more out of Aaron Nesmith. It seems like that's kind of not the finger, you know, but he's kind of an enigma right now. Like he was obviously looked at when they drafted him as a guy that was going to come in, was a great 3-point shooter in college. I think was the best of his draft class, if I'm not mistaken. And that just
way up there, if not the best.
Yeah, absolutely. But that just hasn't translated into the NBA game. He obviously has not been able to find minutes. We saw Peyton Pritchard at times. Struggled to find minutes, had a great, I believe it was the Heat series he played well in, but after that, obviously the finals, he was not good. Personally, I just like, you know, a little more scoring off the bench. I think everyone, Celtics fans, feel the same way. We just talked about it for 5 or so minutes. So that's, I'm kind of glad that's where Brad Stevens seems to be focusing, or putting the main focus on for the Celtics.
Yeah, because ideally you don't want to rely on your bench super heavily for scoring, but you want to have those options for when you do need it.
Exactly. And
maybe guys that are a little more reliable, because Pritchard fell out of favor a little bit. Nesmith isn't there yet. I don't think it's over for Nesmith yet, but like he's still developing. So you got to figure that out. And I think Nesmith can be a solid player off the bench. If developed properly, and he seemed like his postseason comments that he's pretty motivated. So we'll see what that translates into. I've got hope, not a ton of it, but I've got hope.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping for him, but I'm hoping they don't fall. Like, I don't think Brad Stevens is going to fall, because he said plenty of times that they're going to explore everything. I just hope they don't fall into the trap of like, okay, if we can't find anybody or don't want to, like, we have Aaron Nesmith here and we can help him with his, like you said, his comments. He seems to think he can, like, I hope they just don't, like, okay, Aaron Nesmith's here, we'll just throw him into a role and see if he can do it. Like, that's because I think that would be a mistake. Like, you have to get some sort of, like, support if Aaron Nesmith doesn't end up working out. Stevens on the Celtics start, like you said, the start of the season and depth as a whole. Brad Stevens said, quote, we got to start better next year. We need to add people to our group that'll help us do that. So again, I think that's good that, again, it seems like they're going to look to add at least a couple of pieces here or there just to help out, like you said, with the depth, with, you know, getting off to a good start. Cause I'm in the same boat you are. If they can get off to a good start, and again, you give, you know, maybe Tatum and Brown some more rest here and there with some more, you know, reliable pieces, then you might be able to, you know, withstand these long stretches, and guys may not get as tired as much as they clearly did towards the end of the season and the finals as a whole.
Yeah. Yeah. I just got to build things out a little bit and hopefully you get more from Nesmith.
Yep.
I think, you know, we saw flashes talking about Pritchard again of him being pretty good, but I think there's more he can do.
Yep. Absolutely.
I think Grant Williams was overall pretty good for a good chunk of the season, especially early in the playoffs. But I mean, he needs to be better to help them out when it counts the most, because he just didn't late in the playoffs. Yep. He just didn't really do much, which is pretty surprising to me. I expected much more from Grant.
My friend watching the finals, it was funny. A friend of mine also named Mike, he said, kind of had the joke. He was like, it seems like Giannis kind of broke Grant Williams, because like Grant obviously had a phenomenal Milwaukee series. We were, I think, shocked, the both of us, that, you know, he was able to play so well as he did against Giannis and was really a pest and had some big moments in that series. But then again, the Miami series was okay, wasn't anything special. And then he was another one, like the entire bench outside of game one just kind of fell off a cliff, it seemed like. So I thought that was kind of funny. He's like, yeah, Giannis really seemed to just either physically, mentally, whatever, just destroy Grant Williams, which, I mean, it's not an easy thing to do guarding Giannis, you know, another, again, two-time MVP. Like, it's got to take a toll on you to some degree.
Yeah, it does. That's another guy I have faith, you know, can continue to develop, like, not a guy I'm worried about. So that's wonderful, honestly. Yep. It could be a lot different situation, a little more doom and gloom about their futures. But it's not for me. It's not for you. Yep. There is more, though. I mean, Stevens gave us quite a bit to to speculate on and chew on and nibble on for
the yeah, absolutely, which is good. The spend, this was a good one too. I thought, you know, Stevens on spending this summer, he said, quote, "We got the okay to do whatever we need to do." So again, they're not just going to go into next season. I was kind of a little worried about that maybe they might just go into next season with the idea that, you know, this is the group we made the finals with. If we add maybe like one minor piece, we should be able to get right back there. So they don't seem to be too content with how the season ended, which is good. I thought Stevens on other needs to kind of go with that when he said, "I think we need to add a little more playmaking as well. We're at our best when we play with pace and whip the ball around the court. We played a little slow in the last series. There's no doubt that the more guys who can make a play, the better." So again, I feel like this offseason, the Celtics are going to look to add at least maybe 2-3 guys. The playmaking thing is interesting because now that kind of discussion has come up is, do the Celtics need a true point guard, which I don't know how many more true point guards are left in the NBA. Like, you think of Chris Paul, Lonzo Ball is more of a true point guard, you know, a pass first type of guy. A buddy of mine threw Ricky Rubio's name around as maybe as we get, well, like we said, we'll get into, you know, what we think they could do. That's a name that might come up. But the playmaking thing's interesting. Some people have kind of thought that not was a shot at Marcus Smart, but just obviously, again, a point guard that can, you know, handle the ball more. You know, the playmaking thing was interesting. Any, you know, overarching thoughts on the playmaking comments, or are you just kind of like, it's just, he's kind of just saying, just
yeah, they anything. They do need someone else because Kevin White, I think in football, not even, mm-hmm. but like said Kevin for some reason. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. You know why? Because I'm thinking of Kevin Herter.
Okay. That would be a solid.
He's not like a pure point guard to my knowledge, but it's a guy that
had interest. He's a scorer.
He's a scorer. Yep. He averaged 12.1, I just checked, in the regular season per game, which is fine.
I'll take that in a heartbeat. Yep.
They've got links to him in the past. He's young. It kind of seems like, I don't know where they're at with him now, but like kind of seems like a guy in the right deal. They would move, mm-hmm. I imagine, still. I like Kevin Herter. Yep. I like Derek White, but he's just like, he's the guy for the majority of his time here. I just don't feel confident when he has the ball. Like, I don't feel confident for him to hit big buckets. And he did at times, definitely during the playoffs. Like, I'm not saying he's just incapable of it, but he's not a guy I feel super secure with the ball in his hands. I do like his defending overall, but not a guy I'm like super faithful in as a shooter yet. Mm-hmm. At times I definitely was, but not a guy that's like automatic, but it's yep. fine. But I think having a guy like Herter or whoever it may be, Derek White, Grant Williams can shoot at times. I think Herter is a guy to target for me. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't hate them getting, but I don't know. What's the deal with Ricky Rubio? That's an interesting name. I feel like he's been on like 900 teams.
He's bounced around a lot. I didn't realize, like I said, a buddy of mine brought it up that, you know, he'd be a good point guard, but I think he's coming off a torn Achilles or something. Yeah, so, you know, because right. He said that he goes, he'll be at an all-time low price-wise, you got to think, because of that injury. But it's like, all right, he's mid-30s, I think. Do you trust him? He's not going to obviously start for the Celtics by any means. Unless they make some sort of move again, you know, there's talk of, you know, could the Celtics look to trade Marcus Smart, which I think it might be crazy to say if I said this at the start of last year, that I don't know if I would move Marcus Smart necessarily. But I don't know. I mean, Ricky Rubio is an interesting one. Again, do you trust him coming off an Achilles injury, getting up there in age? I think he would, you know, fit the playmaking bill really well, because that's kind of what his strength is obviously he's a pass first guard, can give you 10 to 12 points a night, I feel like. So that might not be the worst move, but again, there are some big question marks with if he's going to be able to get back and play at the level he had been playing with before the Achilles injury.
Yeah, reasonable questions too, but not a guy I would hate taking a flyer on, especially with the all-time low price thing. Like, mm-hmm. you don't need an all-time low price guy, but if you get him at this really low price, he ends up being awesome. It just looks like an even better
move. Looks fantastic, yep.
No, you go ahead. You go ahead.
I was just going to say the other two kind of closing things for Brad Stevens. One was on the offseason approach the Celtics might take. He said, quote, "It's not about blindly acquiring talent. It's about fitting a team together. We did a pretty good job of that this year. I think we have an ability to take off running next season because now we have a foundation and understand who we are as a team." Again, it's not about blindly acquiring talent thing is big to me. Again, I don't want to knock Danny Ainge, but like, that's like, we've talked about this before. Again, we talked about when Brad Stevens was hired that, like, it seems like he's going to be the type of guy that, like, looks to to just like kind of build. Not like, again, I think of when I hear the blindly acquiring talent thing, like I'm curious if Danny Ainge is still here, if the finals went down like they did, if his first move after, you know, they get eliminated was, okay, Bradley Beal is on the table, we have to go out and shell out whatever it takes to get Bradley Beal here. Because, you know, then we'll have three superstars and we'll, you know, we won't have any scoring problems and we'll be good to go. Stevens, again, it seems like he's taking the more, you know, team fit, like he said, it's about fitting a team, you know, the kind of the camaraderie, the, I don't know how to word it, like the good chemistry type of fit, it seems like. Again, they're not looking to blow anything up or do anything drastic. And just look kind of to add pieces here or there that he thinks can fit well. And like the Derek White thing, again, you know, he struggled at times, but it seemed like a guy that did fit right in right when he got here. I think Tatum was the guy that made that comment. Like, you know, he was a good fit right from the get-go when they first got him. I think he'll be fine. I think a full year under his belt with the Celtics is, you know, something that can only help him, you know, get more accustomed to everything, you know, be more comfortable here. So, you know, hopefully he takes a step and hopefully you can find similar guys to him that, you know, come in and do a decent job here when given the opportunity to.
Yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. I just hope it works out. I hope, you know, Steven sticks to the script here because I like the script from what he's been saying.
So, yeah, so far it's written very well, but now the execution, we'll have to see if they can, if he can stick to it. The last one was very surprising to me. It was Steven's on any injury updates. Obviously, you know, we haven't seen, I thought we'd see a little bit more like, you know, we talked about when the Bruins had the season ended, you know, all the injuries start to trickle out of who had what and who was dealing with things. Very surprising for the Celtics. Brad Stevens quote says the Celtics have no anticipated offseason surgeries. He said that Rob Williams and Marcus Smart just need some rest now that the offseason is here. A little interesting. I thought maybe Rob Williams, again, we talked about it. He looked like he was hampered at times and that's not a surprise. So I thought maybe, you know, he would go in to clean some stuff up if he had to. Smart obviously was dealing with a bunch of stuff, it looked like, but he seems like he's going to be fine. And then I was a little surprised, no mention of Jason Tatum anywhere. I don't know if he was asked that question. I didn't see it anywhere about the shoulder or anything or what that injury was. Apparently he's fine. So, and then Jaylen Brown too, he was dealing with the hamstring stuff early in the playoffs, but that seemed to kind of disappear as things went on. So that's good to see. Were you surprised at all that, you know, no surgeries or nothing? Okay.
Even though they were saying towards the end of the finals, Rob Williams was like fine, close to 100%, maybe 100%. I'm surprised we're not seeing something for Rob Williams in
particular. Yeah, just a little tweaking or something. Yeah. Like I said,
I didn't necessarily expect anything with Tatum or Smart, but I just want to say real quick, Tampa just scored 36 seconds in.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
We're going to have a repeat of the Rangers series where they give Colorado two games, and then I hope not. That made me so mad.
Yeah, I mean, Tampa was just right on top of them from the start. Kalorin, Cirelli, and Hagel were out there. Cirelli, like, knocked Kemper's mask off before burying the rebound in front. Like, they were all over Colorado right away. Mm-hmm. And Nathan MacKinnon was a little more concerned with the helmet being off reasonably so than playing defense. But, you know,
all right. Okay.
But very nice. Not a great start for the Avalanche. Not at all, but
damn it. Well, they scored first last game and lost, so maybe Tampa Bay will take that trend and run with it. Score the first goal and then give up, what was it, five or six?
Colorado's had a pretty good scoring chance, speaking of them. Yeah, but that was interesting. That was an explosive start. I had to bring it up.
All right.
Going to be a fun game, a little bit game four.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, back to the surgeries. I really just expected one for Williams. And
for Williams. Surprised.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I expected Rob Williams to be hurt from the whole Draymond thing, too, when he was chasing down Draymond and went down.
Yeah, the,
I can't
the
believe
block,
he
yep.
kept playing. I can't believe he kept playing. Mm-hmm. I thought he was going to be hurt. I thought he was going to tweak something somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to be in big trouble. I mean, obviously, it didn't end well after that. You know, things didn't go well in the last three games as a whole. But I thought Rob Williams was potentially at least going to be out for that game. So
yeah, I mean, like I said, major props to him if he was hurt playing through it. Obviously, nothing it seemed like negative came from it, so that's good. And obviously, plenty of rest can help. I think Stevens was asked about Tatum or what he said to him, and he kind of just told him, like, go home, get some rest, go on vacation, like, basically get your head straight and be ready for next season. So, obviously, a lot to unpack there with Brad Stevens. Like you said, I agree with you. It seems like, you know, the writing of the script is seems to be heading in the right direction, but like I said, there are reports that have come out. There have been some speculation. Of course, it is speculation season with the, I believe it's the 1st of July is when NBA free agency opens. So next Friday, Give you something else to look forward to other than the second installment of Stranger Things season 4. So that'll be good to see that. Like I said, there are some other questions though. One name that has come up, you mentioned him earlier, Al Horford, you know, what you expect from him the next, obviously next season and moving forward. I found this from Legion Hoops on Twitter the other day. So he quote, the Celtics will look to extend Al Horford on a 1 to 2 year, quote unquote, team friendly deal this offseason via, I believe it's, is it Yossi Gozlan on Twitter. He's a blue check mark. He's an NBA salary cap expert and consultant looking up his Twitter. So it seems like a reliable source. Going into next season, Al Horford does have a $26.5 million contract that is partially guaranteed of $19.5 million. I looked that up the other day. So fine with Al Horford coming back. Absolutely. 1 to 2 years. We'll see how that goes. Any overall thoughts on the Horford deal or what you think maybe he could, if you had to guess any sort of, I don't want to put you on the spot here, but like any idea what a team-friendly deal could look like in your eyes?
No, but I think it's going to be pretty cheap, honestly. Okay.
I think so, too. I don't think he's going to ask for much. Yeah.
I mean, he just doesn't seem like the type of guy that's going to need it at this point. Mm-hmm. He loved being, like, the dad of the team, I think.
Yep. Fit that role and very well.
He's made quite a bit of money. Like, he'll want to make things work. He seems like that type of guy. He just wants to be in a, it seems like, you know, talking Anna Horford saying stuff too. Like he just wanted to be back at Boston.
Like, yep. Seemed like it right from the start. Absolutely.
And it was just meant to be. Like, I don't see Al being like, I need this big payday, like for a year or two.
Yeah.
And that would be awesome. Cause it would make things easier for the Celtics. So
absolutely.
Yeah. There's very little doubt in my mind that Al Horford takes a pretty team friendly deal. What that will look like, I can't say for sure. I just can't.
No, nope.
But,
which is fine. We'll obviously have to wait and see on that. We're going to skip
wait and see season.
Absolutely. We will, in the outline here, I have it backwards. We're going to skip the big fish that I mentioned, Bradley Beal, because there is one other really, really stupid thing I saw come out the other day. And there's been a lot of speculation. Like I said, listening to Sports Talk Radio, a bunch of people have called in asking about if the Celtics maybe should go after Kevin Durant. Obviously, if people have followed the Brooklyn Nets the last couple of days, the the Kyrie Irving situation. Kyrie Irving is not seemingly going to work out in Brooklyn, it would appear, as you know, there has been some discussion on if he's going to opt out of his contract, if he's going to have Brooklyn trade him. I saw the Lakers. And who was the other team that came out? I don't know if you saw it the other day. There were two. I want to say Miami, but Clippers. Thank you. It was the Knicks. You're up.
And the Clippers.
You're right.
And the Clippers, which would be.
And the Clippers, yeah. But it seems like I saw a report today that said, you know, the Lakers might be the team that pushes strong for him. I don't know why they would do that. Like, this might be the one time I feel bad for LeBron James if he ends up getting paired with Kyrie again. Good luck to him having to live through that hell again.
I mean, LeBron is the GM of that team. So
like, that's true. Exactly. So that's a good point. Yep. I mean, if he wants him there, he's going to be the guy that pulls that trigger. But yeah, there has been some talk of if, you know, Kyrie leaves and Kevin Durant, if, you know, a championship team or a competitive roster isn't put around KD, could he potentially want out? That, like I said, has led to some morons thinking the Celtics should take a run on Kevin Durant or take a run at Kevin Durant. WEI's Alex Reimer, we've talked about these before, the kind of the who says no to this hypothetical trade articles that have come out. He posted one the other day, and I put this back to back with the Horford stuff because it mentions Al Horford in it. This hypothetical trade would be the Nets trade away Kevin Durant. Of course, the Celtics would then trade away Marcus Smart, Al Horford, Grant Williams, and not one, not two, but three first round picks to the Brooklyn Nets.
One of which they're already missing if they were to, you know, trade, if they were to have traded.
Exactly.
But it's just funny to think like of trading a first round pick when they don't have one this year. Like, I don't think they would do it before the draft, obviously.
No, not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, NBA.
Would you do this hypothetical trade, though?
First, no, I wouldn't.
No, I wouldn't either.
Look, Kevin Durant is arguably the most skilled player in the NBA.
Yep.
But I'm good. I think
you could definitely make that case.
Yep. I'm good. Like, I'm good. I'm good. I really am.
This is the type of deal. Go ahead.
I would hate this more if it included Jaylen Brown. Like, this trade.
I'm shocked it didn't, to be honest. Not like,
the worst thing that it could have been, because I think the worst type of scenario in this would have been including Jaylen Brown in any sense. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, this, like, it's not the worst hypothetical trade I've ever seen, but I wouldn't do it. No, like, you're building this homegrown core. Why dud it after you go to the finals?
Exactly. And I think, like I said, the reason I had with back to back with the Al Horford stuff is for the exact reason you just mentioned. Like, Al Horford was a guy, you said it, that seemed like he wanted to come back here, was very happy that he came back here. You mentioned him. You said he was basically the team dad through the entire season. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown talked about it. It's just at multiple times throughout the season that, you know, how happy they were to have Al Horford back, you know, what his leadership meant to the team. To turn around and then trade him, I know, again, I'm with you. This isn't the worst trade on paper. Kevin Durant obviously puts you leaps and bounds talent-wise above the rest of the NBA.
Especially if you keep Brown.
Exactly. If you run out Brown, Tatum, and Durant, like, it's over. Like, that, I think that'll work out. That would work out really well. But then you look at it, and again, it has Al Horford in it, again, because of money reasons. You'd have to make that work. How would Tatum and Brown react to after you just got Al Horford back and how well it worked out? Like you said, you were two wins away from an NBA Finals with this core pretty much in this team and these pieces in this trade. How would that look now trading away Al Horford to a division rival, to a team that you had to go through to win in the playoffs? Obviously, Brooklyn wouldn't be a playoff team if they made this deal. I think they'd be, you know, bottom of the pecking order and maybe headed towards a rebuild. But it's not terrible on paper, but just the ramifications of trading Al Horford, getting rid of a great defensive player that Marcus Smart is. Again, you know, we kind of sit here again, and Marcus Smart, maybe if the right deal comes up, maybe you do look to move him, or maybe it's not the craziest thing to do, but this would not be the trade to do that in.
Yeah, like, from a practical standpoint, selling high on Marcus Smart would get you a decent amount, or if you were
absolutely yep.
But I don't think it's in the team's best interest right now. You just went to the finals. Right, there's no reason to gut it. There's really not. Mm-hmm. Like Brad Stevens talked about too. Like, there are other ways. Like, that's not in Brad Stevens' mind. Like,
no,
right now. So I don't think it'll happen. I don't think anybody should worry about it either. But do we want to get to Bradley Beal, Mr. Bradley Beal?
Yes, this is the more, I don't want to say realistic, because listening to experts talk about it and just kind of looking through NBA Twitter today and yesterday, I don't know how realistic Bradley Beal is for the Boston Celtics. This is from Michael Scotto of Hoops Hype. I believe it was last night he tweeted this out. So he quotes
Michael Scott with a mustache.
Maybe Scotto, he's a fake Italian.
Never seen them in the same place.
That's true. He said on Twitter, quote, source, Wizards star Bradley Beal will decline his $36.4 million player option for the 2022-2023 season and become an unrestricted free agent this summer, to which Bradley Beal, I think like a half hour later, maybe less time, he tweeted out, quote, wait, huh, LOL. So yeah, we are officially,
The funny thing too is, like, if this were like in an episode of The Office and like Michael had a Twitter, Michael would make an account called Michael Scotto or something.
Just to, yeah, mess with people. Because
he's stupid and immature and be like, it'd be even perfect if it was if it was like a Pittsburgh, like a Pennsylvania-based basketball team, but it's not here. Yeah, it was funny. Not a great look for Michael Scotto, if that is his name.
Well, that's what I mean. We're kind of in the
great, though. It would have been
fantastic. Yeah, I mean, it could maybe still happen. Maybe Bradley Beal is kind of the one that's maybe trying to trick some people and be like, "Oh, I'm not gonna not opt out of my." But we're officially in that part of the NBA season where like rumors are flying and players are going to respond to it. I think it was Keith Smith on Twitter today that said, you know, we're officially in eye emoji season, the sideways looking eye emoji for when anything happens. But there's a lot to unpack with the Bradley Beal stuff. Chris Forsberg, he pointed out last night, I believe on one of the NBC Sports Boston shows, you know, if Bradley Beal declines that option, you know, works out a sign and trade with the Celtics, he's only eligible for a 4-year, $181 million contract. I think if he re-signs with Washington, that puts it at 5, and I thought it was like 206 or 216 or something along that line. But then Chris Forsberg talked about, you know, if the Celtics were to make a trade package for Bradley Beal to make salaries work, you didn't have Jaylen Brown in the Kevin Durant hypothetical. You would probably have to put Jaylen Brown in the Bradley Beal hypothetical, along with Al Horford, Rob Williams, and multiple picks. Ryan McDonough also had a similar thing. He said, quote, a sign and trade is the clear path. Anything else other than that, and Boston would have to gut their entire roster other than Tatum and maybe Brown. He said to make salaries match, Al Horford would have to be the starting point. And then what does Washington want at that point? He asked Rob Williams, Grant Williams, maybe draft picks as well. again, I feel like last year in the offseason, probably at this time, we talked about, like, if the Celtics could get Bradley Beal, you and I were both in on it. Go get him. Like, make this team a super team again. Now, as we sit here today, and again, two wins away from the NBA Finals, and you have a pretty good core, and Brad Stevens doesn't seem like he wants to gut this roster to go out and make a giant deal for a superstar player. Do you really want to bring Bradley Beal in here? Can you make it work? If that, and you know, what would that look like? Are you kind of, as we jump into two, what moves could the Celtics make or should they make? Are you high on going after Bradley Beal, or are you kind of more on the same route that I am, that I think they should probably just tweak a couple of things here and maybe for this offseason lay off of Bradley Beal and kind of wait and see what happens?
Yeah. I've been beating the Bradley Beal drum for like 2-3 years now, but that was in the event that they could just straight up sign.
And okay,
that just doesn't seem like it's going to happen. So I'm out. I love Bradley Beal. I don't want to sign and trade for this guy.
No, that's what I mean. I think you're going to blow your says right there. You're going to blow your roster up if that's the case. And that, I don't think
will not doing it
look great.
No, like, if he were to opt out and hit unrestricted free agency, that was my whole thought for this all this time. Like,
okay,
him hitting the market, he signed him, bing, bang, boom. You do what you got to do. You make it work.
Three motorcycles. Just keep a tally in the corner. Can we get like a graphic or something that's just ding?
Motorcycle going by. You said it.
Yeah, that one wasn't as loud as the other ones. That might have been like a dirt bike or something, but
yeah, or like a
it's moped. Ridiculous. Yeah, like
a somewhat loud moped. That'd be pretty loud for a moped.
That would be incredibly loud for a moped.
Yeah, and in a scenario where he somehow does end up becoming an unrestricted free agent, get him, just get him. But no, like Bradley,
make Beal, it work.
Nope. If it's a sign and trade, don't want it. But yeah, my list of hopefuls aren't as detailed as yours, but bench scoring depth, like we talked about earlier, I'd like Kevin Huerter. Ricky Rubio could work if, you know, he's good enough to go and you can make it work there. Sure, there are a litany of other options. And for me, reassurance for Rob and Al on the bench, because you don't know what Al's going to be like next year. You're going to need someone else besides Rob to kind of go into that mix of your bigger guys.
Mm-hmm.
And Daniel Tice was acquired to get rid of bad contracts, but I think at some point they're probably hoping he'd be a little more involved in the playoffs, and that just wasn't an equitable thing. Mm-hmm. So if you can get a guy that's a little more safe for that type of role, like a change of pace guy and that type of player style, that's a priority for me. Like, because you're not going to cut it with Daniel Tice next year. You're not going to cut it with
Luke. Not even close.
Like, it's not something you should rely on. So I'd like to see another piece there, someone you can rely on some more there. Those are my top three things.
Okay.
Well, top two, essentially.
I was going to say,
on him being an unrestricted free agent, but that's going to happen. So that's where I'm at.
I think that's a good starting point. I, for my number one, again, it's the same thing Brad Stevens has mentioned. I feel like you have to, and you have said the same thing as well. You got to get one or two legitimate bench scorers or just shooters in general off your bench, a guy that can come in and knock down shots. Cause like we talked about numerous times, you just didn't have enough of that in the finals. I didn't do, you know, too extensive of a look. I was just trying to quickly skim through, you know, who could be out there. But it doesn't have to be any one particular player. Just again, that type of player, a scorer, a knockdown shooter, some names that stood out to me. I saw, again, might be a little on the older side, but you saw how well an older Al Horford worked for you. Lou Williams, I didn't realize his contract is up in Atlanta. Didn't have the greatest of years last year, but he's a guy I think a lot of people, like, you just know Lou Williams is, you know, he's basically the prototypical sixth man, comes in and scores, you know, that's his whole shtick. So maybe if you get him here in a short-term, low money contract, could make that work. Wouldn't be the worst thing possible. Jalen Brunson, I heard his name come up the other day because he's available as his free agent with Dallas. I don't know why Dallas would let him go. That'd be dumb. But if he does somehow walk, that's a pipe dream for me, because I think, again, he'd be a great shooter. He was excellent in the playoffs for Dallas. He'd be a perfect fit on the bench. My number two for my list of things they need is just some sort of veteran wing, and maybe the veteran comes in Lou Williams if they can get a guy like him. More of a guard, of course. But a veteran wing to help take the minutes off of Tatum and Brown. I didn't say it earlier, but just, you know, Tatum, there was a stat. He played over 3,000 minutes this season, which was absolutely insane. It was over 800 more minutes than Al Horford, over 600 more minutes than Marcus Smart, and over 500 more minutes than Jaylen Brown. So you need That's some sort crazy. Of help.
The Jaylen Brown one there in particular is nuts to me.
Yeah. Yep. It's insane. Yeah. The exact number for Tatum was 3,714 minutes. That was 739 more minutes than Steph Curry played for Golden State, the equivalent of around 21 games. So that's
fucked up.
That's insane. Yep. That just goes to show you need some more depth on this team and some more proven depth. So like I said,
Kevin Herter. I've heard.
Yeah, exactly. Kevin Herter would be good. Apparently PJ Tucker for the Miami Heat, he's going to opt out of his final year. That would be, I said it during that series, PJ Tucker hated playing against him, but he would be the perfect Celtic, I think. Just because of the play style he has. I wouldn't hate Serge Ibaka. Again, I know a guy that's on the older side, but he's a guy that has a championship or two under his belt. I know he won one with Toronto. I don't know if he was around for, if he was on any other of the more recent championships, but he'd be a guy that I wouldn't hate, a guy that can come in, knock down shots, gives you a good veteran presence. Could be a potential, my number three, a backup center. Like you said, Rob Williams is going to need some help, I think, moving forward, just because you don't know about the injury. Al Horford, you and I both expect him to be good next season. But again, you can't rely on 36-year-old Al Horford moving forward a lot. I just don't think he's going to put up the same numbers he put up this year. Again, any backup, legitimate backup center other than Daniel Tice. Like I've just done with the Daniel Tice experiment. Some names that I saw, again, that were on the market or could potentially hit the market. I know he's kind of a meme, but I wouldn't hate JaVale McGee here. Again, a guy with some championship pedigree, has been to multiple finals. A guy that has pretty much just been a bench player at this point in his career, can come in and log some decent minutes. LaMarcus Aldridge is an interesting name I heard come up. He has that connection with Ime Udoka because of his stint with the Spurs. So maybe that's the guy that you can get a little bit more out of, like an Al Horford. Maybe he's your Al Horford 2.0 going into next season. If you bring him in, he gels with Ime and you get something out of that. And then I'm not one of the people that are, harping for a true facilitating point guard, because I think there's some people that are just that shouldn't be your number one need going into this offseason. But if the Celtics do want to add maybe one more backup guard, if they don't think, Pritchard can give them what they need, or if maybe they think they look at White as more of a shooting guard. Tyus Jones is a name I've heard thrown around with Memphis. I think if I heard it correctly yesterday on the radio, I think he was had the least amount of turnovers or average turnovers in the league last year. So that would be great for the Celtics. Obviously, with the turnover problems, bring him in. He can protect the ball, can score a little bit. Some people, I saw one or two people bring up, maybe it was an article written, maybe Avery Bradley, make a reunion with him. Obviously, you know what you have in him, good defensive player. He's a guy that is going to maybe provide good minutes. I saw Goran Dragic. He's a free agent potentially. Does he have anything left in the tank? He wouldn't, I think, be the worst option. And we already talked about Ricky Rubio. Can you trust him coming off an injury? Would he take a reduced role? Because I think he's one of those guys that had still been starting at times. He's not one of the more, bench role type of guys. So maybe you'd have to convince him on that. But again, the Celtics were two wins away from the finals. I don't think, free agents will take that much convincing as maybe they would have in the past, with obviously the core that the Celtics have moving forward. And maybe you're going to want some guys that, want to come here and maybe play with the likes of Brown and Tatum.
Yep. Avery Bradley would be an interesting one. I don't know how much he has left, but that'd be an interesting.
Yeah, that's kind of. I saw the name. Tucker, I'm like, idea. PJ. That would be, I think, my number one. If you can get a guy, be him. I saw they're interested in Nicholas Batum, which wouldn't be the worst thing. He's a solid veteran, can knock down some threes at times. That's not a deal I would hate, but that's a deal where it's okay, you got Nicholas Batum. What else are you going to add to that? Because that's just not the one main piece that you should be getting, but. Again, a guy that has come off the bench, isn't the worst three-point shooter, can knock down some shots, and again, a good veteran guy.
Yeah. Yep. Off-season, emoji season, speculation season, speculation.
The draft is tomorrow, but because the Celtics don't have a first-round pick, I'm not all that, interested in the draft. Didn't really do anything.
Preview, yeah.
Exactly. The only thing I saw today is I was a little curious of, their reasoning for this, and maybe not their reasoning, because you want to obviously get some young talent, but I did see the report they're trying to trade back into the first round. I don't know what they would have to give up to get back into the first round. I saw they are knocking on Golden State's door to see if Golden State would maybe trade the 28th pick. Be like, hey, we helped you win a finals. Could you maybe help us out and give us a draft pick? Maybe it's a nice trade there, but who knows? be interesting to see if they can maybe work something out.
Won't go in the late first.
Really, yeah, that's what I mean. Like, they really haven't hit any late for Rob Williams was the most recent one that's worked out. Everything else has kind of been, and again, maybe that's different with Brad Stevens drafting at the helm and see, you know, if he can make some better decisions than maybe Danny Ainge made with some of those later first round draft picks. But again, like,
I feel like we'd be hearing some buzz and I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, there is still some time. I think it's 8 o'clock tomorrow for the draft, so maybe we'll see more come out tomorrow. But like, I'm with you. Like, at this point, I would more so focus on if you can do it, bringing in some veteran guys that have some pedigree in this league, and you know that you know can give you something in the NBA. Don't go out and get another Aaron Nesmith like player that you know maybe you hope can help you at the NBA level, but needs some time to develop.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I'm not really like clamoring for a pick. So
no, I am not either.
We'll see what happens. Like,
you know, if they do make one, though, we'll obviously recap it on next week's show. But that is for next week, and we'll have to wait and see, of course.
Yeah. On to Red Sox.
Yeah, I wanted to get a. Obviously, we haven't talked about the Red Sox in I don't know how long, but just a quick thought on them because they have kind of played themselves back into the race a little bit here. 38-31, they're third in the AL East, 12 and a half games back. So I don't think they're going to catch the Yankees, who Tony Maserati today said they're on pace for like 120 wins, which hurts me. But you know, I'll give credit where credit's due. The Yankees are steamrolling everybody this year. Maybe they finally put some things together. No. The thing the Red Sox are playing for, though, is probably
the Bruins. I don't know why I said the Bruins. I'm already thinking towards the hockey segment. The Yankees won't win the World Series. Like, I'm just gonna say it. They'll find a way to mess it up. They will.
I'm still waiting. Yep, you're waiting for that collapse, but
it's a different look... team. But when it comes down to it, they'll find a way to collapse.
I don't think that's too far fetched to think, but I don't know. It's just I've heard a couple people say they have the looks of the 2018 Red Sox, which, like, again, that team just obliterated everybody in their path. And you know, hope as a Red Sox fan, the Yankees don't have that same look and that same feel. But right now, I mean, there's nobody that has even come close to stopping them of late. But right now, the Red Sox are playing for that wild card spot. Thankfully, there are three wild card spots now. They're tied for the second with Minnesota. A half a game back at Toronto for that top spot. And like I said, the reason they are in the position they are in is because they have played pretty damn near excellent baseball. Since May 13th, they've won 10 out of their last 12 series. During that stretch, record-wise, they're 27-12. If you want to just factor in the month of June, they are a ridiculous 15-4. They are currently beating the Tigers, if people aren't watching that game, 4-2. So maybe another sweep is on the horizon, or just another series win, because they already won the series with two games at the beginning of this series. But my question to you is, as we jump into like the bigger thought of the Red Sox, is during this win streak, and this is something I was talking to my dad about, you look at the teams they've beaten, excluding the Cardinals, who they just took 2 out of 3 from. The Red Sox have beaten teams with a combined record of 105 and 170. They've beaten the fifth place Reds, the fifth place Athletics, the third place Angels, and they are, like I said, they already took the series from the fourth place Tigers. Give credit where credit's due, though. They have, you know, battled through injuries. You know, they're without Nathan Eovaldi, Garrett Whitlock, Matt Barnes, Kike Hernandez, and Christian Arroyo. So some bigger names than others, but some decent size injuries there. They've had multiple guys step up from the likes of John Schreiber. He's kind of solidified a role in that bullpen. Jaron Duran's been excellent since being recalled from AAA. Now, of course, we came to find out today that he is not going to be able to help them in the Blue Jays series because he's not vaccinated. We're not going to get into that too much, but kind of a bit of a kick in the balls there, if I'm being honest. Like, he's a guy that kind of had solidified that leadoff spot with what he's been able to do. Rob Refsnyder, who at the start of the offseason in spring training was not a good hitter in spring training. I was thinking, you know, why is this guy even on this team? He's not good. He's just a minor league bum. He's been excellent. He's played great defense, given you good hitting. I think he hit a home run tonight. So he's right in the middle of this come from behind win if the Red Sox can pull this out. Josh Winkowski, he was obviously acquired in the Benintendi trade. He's been great in the rotation. He's made a couple of starts here and there, 2 wins and 3 starts. Tyler Danish, a guy that we thought was just kind of, there, a placeholder at the start of the season in the bullpen.
Perhaps a pastry.
perhaps a pastry. I think, yeah, you made that joke when they put him on the opening day roster. We were trying to figure out who he was.
Still not convinced he's not a team player.
Still not convinced he's a real person. he's been good. I mean, had a rough outing the other night against the Cardinals, but other than that, like, he has been much better than I thought he was going to be. Franchi Cordero has been excellent in the clutch this season. He's hitting .276 with a couple of homers and 16 RBIs with runners in scoring position. So he has stepped up in big moments. And then the usual suspects, Devers has been great. Martinez has been very good. Bogarts has been holding it down. Trevor Story and Christian Vasquez. And even Jackie Bradley Jr. has come up with some big hits at times. JBJ is hitting .296 this year of runners in scoring position. He's got 22 RBIs. He's hitting .313 at Fenway this year. So, you know, good to see Jackie Bradley Jr. maybe having a bounce back season. I know I've kind of thrown a lot at you, but how are you feeling with this Red Sox team right now? Are you kind of in the same boat I am, where it's like, you know, they've beaten up on the bad teams, but the good teams do that. And, you know, you have to obviously beat the teams that you've said this before. You just got to beat the teams that are on the schedule. Are you kind of like, you know, I need to see more from this team against, you know, better competition.
That's where I'm at. I'm in limbo right now.
Okay. I think that's a solid place to be.
So like, we're not seeing the identity quite so much with everyone battling mm-hmm. Evaldi, Whitlock, Barnes, Hernandez, and Arroyo, as you have listed in the outline here.
Yep.
So I'd see a more clear picture, like to see against better teams, and you know, they're still figuring things out. So you know, as much as they've accomplished, there's still a lot of work to do. It's nice to see Pivetta making my preseason prediction look a little bit better.
Yeah, that looks great now as the season's gone on, that he has turned in. I mean, with Ellie Evaldi, he has needed to be the ace of the staff, and he has sure as hell pitched like one. I mean, he's been great since really his first two or three starts of the season.
Yeah, he's going a little sicko mode on him, and we know he's got the fire, so
yep.
That's good. But I mean, like, I didn't know who John Schreiber even was going into this year, so seeing him do so well is very surprising. It's interesting to see, you know, Jared Duran in a limited sample size hitting over .300. That's nice. Kind of hoping, you know, at times whenever he is going to be up this year, that he takes that next step, shows some signs of development, and he certainly is. So that's good. Rob Refsnyder is just, like, funny. I feel like they just, every year, they sign one or two of these guys and hope they work out, and sometimes these guys do. Yep. Refsnyder is almost hitting .400, as you have in the outline here, which is wild. He actually just hit a home run like 10 minutes ago.
So that's what I thought. I looked up, but I couldn't see who was running around on the bases. I thought it was him, but wasn't 100% sure.
Yeah, I mean, Franchi's contributed at times, and you have Winkowski and Danish, who I'm not convinced is...
It's an actual thing.
She's Danish with two legs and arms and this guy, so... And Rafael Devers is like an MVP candidate.
If Aaron Judge wasn't going sicko mode, I think Devers would be the odds-on favorite right now, because he's been phenomenal since day one.
Motivation to sign him.
Yep. Please. I would like some sort of rumblings that, like, you've at least – I mean, they're not going to during the season. They'll give you the same thing that they did with Bogarts, is we're not going to talk contract during the year. But, like, I just like something like, hey, we've met with his agent. We've met with his camp. We'll – you know, come around and touch base towards the end of the season. Like, just give me something, give some sort of hope that they're going to re-sign this guy. Cause at this point he is just upping his price tag more and more every night. Like, you're going to have to shell out $300+ million for him for 8+ years. Like, it's going to be ridiculous. But he's going to earn every penny of that. Cause like you said, he is right now my number two for AL MVP.
Yeah. I mean, how can he not? Like, sure, there's other candidates, but like, it's very reasonable to have him in that number two spot right now. You know, Judge is the clear favorite, but it's very reasonable to have him in that spot. You know, I'm still in limbo. Like you said, with the teams that they're beating in this, the stretch they're on, like Cincinnati, Oakland, LA, and Detroit, like none of those teams impressed me. Like, Detroit could have turned things around, but it doesn't seem like they're doing that. And Javi Baez is just having a terrible year.
Yeah, he's starting to heat up a little bit, but he's been bad. I mean, they took a big hit. I don't know if you saw the report. I think it was the beginning of this week that they're not going to have Eduardo Rodriguez for the rest of the season. He left the team with some sort of personal matter or something, or a family issue. So that's obviously a big loss for them.
Tommy John as well.
Yeah, there. I forgot there was one other one. Think you mentioned that Casey Mize, one of their top.
Casey Mize, I thought it was Casey Mize.
One of their big.
I didn't remember.
Exactly. No, you're right. One of their big starters. Yep, he's going to have Tommy John, so that's a big loss for them. I mean, their offense has not been. I think they have one of the worst offenses in baseball. So they're making my pick of the Tigers being a maybe sneaky playoff team, not look all that good at the start of the season. Angels, like you said, Angels have fallen off a cliff. They were good at the start of the year, but they have come back down to play like the typical Angels that they've played.
Madden,
like
Joe Madden got a mohawk to
and got
his team around canned. And got fired.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That was honestly just hilarious.
Yep. Oakland and Cincinnati. Yeah, I mean, those are
work.
Just exactly.
Work.
Nope. Yep. You're nope. Fired. Goodbye.
Hey guys, hey, you know, I know it's going tough right now, but like I got a mohawk.
Look at my mohawk. John, could you step into my office really quick? We gotta have a discussion. Put your hat back on and look
like
a professional,
dad,
please.
Like trying to cheer up his kids and bring like cool. A couple goldfish home.
Yeah,
and then he goes and they're like dead in the fish tank, and the kids like why?
Just drops them in, and then it just floats right to the top. Never even swims around once.
Yeah,
he's just sleeping. But I mean, I feel the same way. You
wake up.
Yeah, exactly. You're tapping on the thing.
Freaking Darla.
Yeah. But no, I mean, I feel this. I think you have a right to feel like you're in limbo, or do you think the Red Sox are in limbo? I'm kind of in that same boat. Like, I want to take them seriously, and I think the Cardinals series showed you a little bit of, you know, of that they can beat good teams, because the Cardinals, I think, were leading the Central before the series against the Red Sox. Obviously, the Red Sox came and played them well. They had some good moments in that series. You know, game one, Walker has another excellent start. They have a big seventh inning rally. With, you know, the mixture of Franchi Cordero had a big double, I think, in that. Bradley drove him in or had a productive out. Dahlbeck had a big double. Devers helped out as well. The bullpen, though, that's kind of been, again, it's been the Achilles heel of this team as the season has gone on. It still is, which is the one thing that's making me not want to believe in this team, because the bullpen had a a five-run lead. They gave up four runs, almost lost that game in the ninth. Game two was a straight-up disaster. Like, Cutter Crawford should not be on a major league roster. At least just not this one. Like, maybe you can entice a team to take him and trade for him or something, and maybe get you something that can actually help you, because that guy sucks. Like, I'm just going to put it out bluntly there.
Why would a team want him in a trade, though?
I don't know. Maybe you can pull a Danny Ainge and fleece somebody. Like, they've done it in the past.
Like a Heath Hembree, not as old as Heath Hembree. Like,
exactly. Or yeah. Yeah, I mean, the deal worked out for both teams because he's having a good year with Pittsburgh, but, like, Michael Chavis was stinking it up last year, and you were able to get Austin Davis.
Michael Chavis almost died from O'Neill Cruz throwing a 97-mile per hour. To see someone in the infield at 6'7" is ridiculous.
That he's a freak. He's a flat-out unicorn. Yeah.
He's huge. He's got a buttery smooth swing with that. Mm-hmm. Just like looks like he could actually hit a ball like 130 miles an hour off the bat. Mm-hmm.
That's what he did his first game.
Resurrect the Pirates franchise.
I was just going to say that gives Pirates fans something to look forward to, because that kid's going to be an absolute stud. Like, it took him a while to get here because Pittsburgh, they screwed around with him and wanted to manipulate his service time. But now that he's here, like, that's a guy that should be a main staple of that team for years to come. Like, he's going to be very good.
He went for the triple, which was awesome. If he almost made it. Like, he kind of made a move to the left too to try and dodge the tag, and he almost pulled it off. Like,
he's fast for a guy his size. Like, he motors.
Ridiculous. He is a freak of nature.
Yes, he is. Like I said, he is a unicorn and then some. Like that, he's going to be fun to watch. And, you know, all the power to Pirates fans. They are very lucky to have a guy like that. Back on the Red Sox really quick, though. I mean, like I said, the third game of the series, again, show you something. Pivetta, like you said, potential Cy Young candidate. If he keeps going the way he is, I don't think that's too crazy to say. He's resurrected the rotation as a whole. He was excellent. You know, he battled through that game, had four walks, 10 strikeouts. You had two big home runs from Trevor Story and Christian Vasquez, again, feeding into the, you know, the clutch hits. But then again, the bullpen almost blows it. They have to hold on to a 6-4 lead. Like, again, I want to believe in this team because they're doing some good things when a lot of, you know, big name guys are out. Like we mentioned, you know, Eovaldi is out, but the rotation is stepped up. Garrett Whitlock, again, should be in the bullpen. I think you have to put him in the bullpen at this rate when he comes back. I just don't, I mean, it's worked out so far, but I just don't trust Tanner Houck as the closer right now, and to even call him the closer. I don't think they have a defined title, because you saw John Schreiber close a game out last night. So I think you have to, at this point, move Whitlock or go out and do like some sort of move to get a legitimate closer in here, because that's going to help, I think, propel this team over the top. But like we said, moving forward, you're kind of getting into your, you know, show me what you're made of gauntlet of facing good teams starting Friday, you know, heading into the All-Star break. The Red Sox will face one team with just a sub 500 record. That's the Cubs at 25-43. The rest of the schedule consists of the Guardians and the Blue Jays, who are on, they're on the road to face. And then it's 14 games in a row, which whoever made this schedule is just, I don't know why you would do that. 14 straight games against the likes of the Rays and Yankees, just alternating back to back. I'm looking at those teams: Cleveland's 35-28, Toronto's 38-30, Tampa Bay's 37-31. And the Yankees, like I said, beating up on everyone. They're the only 50 win team in baseball, I think, right now. I don't know if the Mets have gotten there yet. I don't think they have, but New York is 50-18. Like I said, you're probably not going to catch the Yankees. So you're going to be playing for those games against Toronto and Tampa Bay and even Cleveland. Like Cleveland's, I think they're tops in the Central Division right now, but they're still a team that could be fighting for the wild card if they fall out of favor in the Central. You have to play like you played against the Cardinals and, you know, put up some good fights against these teams moving forward, because this is going to be your competition for pretty much the remainder of the season. Because I think that's kind of the one thing, too, to have some hope for this Red Sox team is everybody else in the AL East kind of sucks. Like, other than Cleveland, Toronto, Tampa, Minnesota, I feel like I'm forgetting one potential wild card team. Like Texas has been up there a little bit, but they're nothing.
Seattle's having a bad year.
Too crazy. Seattle, again, a team I picked to makes me think I don't know anything about baseball. Division. Yeah, not a great look there for either of us. But yeah, they've had it. That's what I mean. They've had a down year. The White Sox, who I picked to win the Central. I don't know if you did or not.
I did, yeah.
You did too? Okay, so we're 0-2 on that then. Like all these other teams, they suck. Like the White Sox, again, if I think they should fire Tony La Russa, maybe that'll light a fire under that team. But like the Red Sox are, I know, right? Yeah. 80-year-old manager with a bunch of 25- and 26-year-olds that like to play energetic and fun. Yeah, that's wild that didn't work out. But no, I mean, there's just so many bad teams. Like the Red Sox are just leaps and bounds better than the middle of the pack. Like they should be able to squeak into the playoffs and, you know, make some noise, hopefully, but that's kind of the one thing that's helping move forward with this team is just everyone else is so bad that the Red Sox on paper should not be like anywhere near, you know, losing to any of these teams moving forward because it's just because of how the talent differential is.
Yeah. It's the thing too, we haven't really like mentioned it's super specific is like they're trying to catch up. So like,
exactly. Yep.
If they were doing this and they're like second in the division, I'd be more excited.
Absolutely. Yep.
Not. So
yeah, they're trying to dig themselves out of the hole they put themselves in with a horrendous start to the season. But
Yep. Again,
I'll give them credit. They have made it worth interesting and worth watching baseball. Like I did not think after the Celtics and Bruins season ended that we would really have anything all that positive to talk about with the Red Sox. But here we are, like I said, 7 games over .500 and competing for a playoff spot. And hopefully, you know, they can iron some things out with that bullpen. Again, make the move or two that solidifies some things and you will be a more complete team than you are. Cause that's, like I said, really the one glaring weakness of this team right now. They're hitting like they should. They're pitching out of their minds. Maybe that comes back down to earth a little bit, but like, if you can get some bullpen pieces and make things easier for the starters, like that's only going to help you moving forward.
Yeah. Credit to them for, you know, starting to play good when Bruins and Celtics season are now both officially over. Credit to them. Very classy. So
it's weird. Pressure wasn't on them at the start of the year because no one was really interested and they kind of played like no one was interested. And now that the pressure's on, that they're the only ticket in town right now to watch. Now they're playing good. So who knows? Maybe they can keep that up.
We shall see. What was I going to say first? I thought I was going to say something, but maybe I'm just overthinking things. On to Bruins. We're starting with what my ballots would have been like for the awards and some other Bruins things. We might as well just get right into it, into the Hart Trophy. Austin Matthews wins. Could have totally seen this happening. I would have voted for Igor Shesterkin, though. Had one of the best seasons we've seen in our lifetimes from a goalie. He's just so ridiculously good this year. The Rangers were not a playoff team without him. I would have voted for Shesterkin. He just had a ridiculous year. Looks like he could be the perennial Vezina winner for years and years to come. Absolutely. Mine would have went Shesterkin, Matthews, McDavid, Roman Josi, and Johnny Gaudreau. So Matthews, incredible all-around season, 60 goals, pretty crazy. Definitely a case to win the Hart, but I would vote Shesterkin personally. McDavid. Roman Josi, like, willed the Predators along and had, like, the best season by a defenseman since Ray Bourque. So that's pretty good. And Johnny Gaudreau in a contract year just went silly bananas with that top line in Calgary. And it was awesome. I think he's absolutely worthy of top five consideration for the Hart Trophy. We're not going to go through all, like, the voting breakdowns, maybe a couple of them, but not super worth it. I say everybody's seen them, and, you know, if they want, they can look them up. But would you have picked I'm curious to see, would you have picked Matthews, or would you have picked Shesterkin or McDavid?
I think when we did the predictions, I had Matthews. I 100% understand your reasoning for Shesterkin, but I think mine at the time, because you asked me too about if I would pick Shesterkin for the MVP, and I think I alluded to the same thing of baseball. Like, I don't think pitchers should win the MVP because they have their own award. So as you'll get into, obviously Shesterkin won the Vezina, so that's good to see there. But I would have stuck with Matthews, like I said, just for the reason that I think the goalies have their own award, stick to it. Like, I can see, like, I'm with you. He is the main reason that the Rangers went as far as they did.
Yeah. And it comes back to the whole most valuable player thing. Austin Matthews, infinitely valuable to the Toronto Maple Leafs, but Shesterkin is worth more to the Rangers than Matthews is in some respects, of course, different positions to the Maple Leafs. Like, the team's just not a playoff team without him. They just aren't. You could maybe say the same thing about the Maple Leafs, but the Maple Leafs have a pretty good deal of talent outside of Austin Matthews. So maybe they would be, maybe they wouldn't be, but that's not what we're here to talk about. The Norris Trophy went to Kale McCarr. Very reasonable. I mean, Kale McCarr is the best defenseman in the world. But I would have picked Roman Josi. I think what Roman Josi did, particularly in the second half of the season, was out of this world. He was just an absolute force. He's been, like, arguably the best puck-moving defenseman for a few years now. He's so good in transition. He's so efficient and smart. It would have been so close to me, and it was in the voting. It was, like, very close. The closest.
I think he got more first-place votes, right?
Yeah, I think Josi had, like, six more first-place votes, but, like, McCarr had, like, six less and then a bunch of second-place votes more. Mm-hmm. So, like, I think he won by, like, 37 points or something.
Yeah, I saw it was close. Race. I didn't see the number, really though, yeah. Real.
I would have picked Josi, though. It was like the voting ended up being is, like, could have gone either way, but I would have picked Josi. Nothing against McCarr, and, of course, it doesn't factor in playoff performance, but we're seeing McCarr doing the playoffs now is definitely unbelievable as well. But I would have picked Josi. He just willed that team along as the captain should. And he's just an absolute tour de force. But yeah, I would have had Kale McCarr second, but I can totally see why they picked him. I mean, Kale McCarr is just ridiculous. He's unlike anything we've ever seen in the 21st century for a defenseman. We've seen great defensemen. We've seen, like, Eric Carlson, Chris Letang is pretty good in his prime. We've seen these good players. Yeah, I'm not going to list them all out, but he's good puck movers, great skaters and all that. But Kale McCarr is just on another level. It's insane. He's the best defenseman we've seen since Paul Coffey. So, yeah, there's that. I would have picked Charlie McAvoy third. I would have put Charlie McAvoy third on my ballot. I think Charlie McAvoy was easily, you know, and obviously the Bruins' best defenseman this year. He's an absolute force. He's a physical machine. He's extremely intelligent with the puck and without the puck. He upped his offensive game, which, you know, it is best defenseman, but points do factor in to the Norris. Charlie McAvoy is a tank. He's this kid's jacked. He's a stallion. All that good stuff with him. He's recovering now, so hopefully he'll return to Norris form next year. I have really no doubts. I have Victor Hedman at four. It was kind of tough between him and Slavin. I think I could have put Slavin four, but I'd go Hedman. He really rounded out his game in some ways he didn't do in the year before. I think he became, you know, better outside of just the power play. I think this season before he was primarily, like, not primarily, but, like, more so of a one-dimensional guy in the power play and kind of well-rounded things a little more, became more of a consistent threat than I think he was last year. So still amazing last year, but I think he had an even better year this year. Definitely belongs in the top five. Jacob Slavin, arguably the best defensive defenseman in the league, or at least guy in his own zone, because the guy can play in transition and move the puck very well. We saw that in the playoffs, and we've been seeing it for a few years. Slavin is a beast, extremely intelligent defenseman. Kind of crazy to leave Adam Fox off this year, but there's just like, there's such a good group of talent at the top. It was like, it was, you had to pull one guy out of it this year. And for this year, for me, it's Fox. It's crazy given the fact that he won the Norris last year, but I think some people were kind of in the same boat too. Like, there's such a just good group of names at the top. It's one guy you didn't want to keep out of the top five, had to be out of the top five. That's just how it is. But I hope Rangers fans aren't too mad at me if any of them are listening. But
no.
For you, would you have gone Makar for the Norris? Would you have gone maybe someone off the board? Would you have gone McAvoy?
I don't know if I would have gone McAvoy, just because, like you said, there's just so – it seems like this year especially, there was just so many, like, phenomenal defensemen. And I think I had Makar when we did, again, when we did the predictions. But I wanted to ask you about him. I don't want to say it was a popularity vote, because, again, if Roman Josi, it's just the three finalists are phenomenal defensemen as a whole. But I think the reason I went, and I think when I did, I said this, it just seemed like the coverage was of this season, or like more so the Makar got a lot more headlines and a lot more news and stuff than a guy like Roman Josi. And maybe that's because Colorado was so good in the regular season as a whole. And like you said, it was kind of Josi that had to not drag Nashville along, but you mentioned it that, you know, the main reason they were there is because of him. So that's kind of where I was at. I don't know if, didn't know if you felt the same way, that like maybe Makar got it just because the coverage was more on him, it seemed like, throughout the season, or there was just a lot more people, like, or more buzz, I guess, around Makar. Or if you just thought it was like, again, I don't want to say like fair and square or anything like that to make it seem like Josi was completely robbed, but like, I feel like there were some people that could argue that he was, you know, or should have been the guy.
No, yeah, I think there's definitely some merit to that, but I think at the same time, Josi got a lot of headlines once he really started popping off. So it's kind of like, it's kind of like something I wouldn't buy either way, but it's something worth mentioning. I'm glad you did, because it just contributes to how, you know, close it ended up being, how close of a race it was throughout the season. Like, people were going back and forth, like, oh, Makar's the clear favorite. Then Josi starts going crazy, like, oh, maybe Yossi's going to take it. It kind of went back and forth, but yeah, I think either way it would have been a good pick. You know, McAvoy had a fantastic season, but I don't think he should have won it. But if he did, I wouldn't dispute it too much. But
he got a first place vote, didn't he?
He did. He did get one. Yeah, but it had to be Josi or Makar this year, and I'm fine with the result. The Selke, absolutely. Selke happened a little while ago, but I would have picked Patrice Bergeron. This one was really tough because there's just so many good ones this year. I would have went Bergeron, Barkov, Lindholm. The whole thing, if you're into the metrics, things kind of went against one another in certain different types of metrics for Lindholm, but I thought he was a good, you know, three zone presence on that dominant line for a good chunk of the season. Kind of some yikes moments in the playoffs, but, you know, with this, it's just a regular season thing they make the decision off of. So, I would have gone Lindholm three. It was kind of tough, though. Anthony Cirelli, I think, belongs to the top five. He was bananas this year defensively, just really becoming a better and better defensive fourth, better shutdown center by the year. And this might surprise some people. I had Valeri Nichushkin at five. I think he just turned into a monster this year. So funny how, you know, he's a high draft pick. I think it was 2014, maybe 2012. I might be mixing up the draft year. Goes to the Stars, ends up being bought out last year after having zero goals in like 57 games. And you've seen in the playoffs too, like, the whole season has just been a monster. He's big, he's strong, he's assertive, he's just like physical. He's like almost a perfect winger. Like, he's so good, and he's a free agent. He's going to cash out wherever he goes, whether they keep him around or not. He's a monster, and I think he is worthy of some Norris consideration, Selke consideration. He was just a monster in all three zones, and he has continued to be in the playoffs again, regular season award. But my God, was Valeri Nichushkin good this year? I think he's worthy of it. Some people might disagree, but this is another one. There was a lot to choose from. I can speak for you, though, that you would have picked Bergeron to win.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. No real debate there for us. The Calder Trophy, one of the more divisive ones. I would have picked Moritz Seider. I had Cole Caulfield post preseason. Maybe he would have been more in the race if he had Marty St. Louis coaching him all year, because things went a lot differently when they changed coaches. Moritz Seider, like, actually carried the blue line for the Red Wings on his back as a rookie. He's so good. And he's another guy that's going to factor into the Norris discussion for years and make it even tougher. Like, mm-hmm. there's so many good defensemen in this new age of the NHL. It's going to be so hard to pick the Norris every year. And Seider is absolutely going to be in that mix if he keeps up this trajectory. I think he will. The personality, everything, the assertive, you know, physical nature of him when he needs to be physical, super smart player, just a beast, like an absolute beast right away. The pick when they drafted him, I remember, was definitely a reach, surprised some people, but Stevie Y and the scouting staff in Detroit made the right pick. An absolute horse. I'm so excited to watch him in the future. I would have had Trevor Zegras at 2, Lucas Raymond at 3, Jeremy Swayman at 4. I think Swayman had a pretty awesome season overall. I think if there was any goalie worthy, it was him. I'd put him in my top 5. Had to fill some big shoes along with Linus Ullmark for Tuukka Rask. He did so quite adequately overall. Such a stud. Looked pretty good early on for Swayman's early career development. And I would have Michael Bunting 5. I am one of those people that is in the camp that his production was largely influenced by Auston Matthews and or Mitch Marner. Whoever he had played with on the power play as well. I'm putting him at 5 because I think he's really good, okay. But he's also like 25. He's had some NHL experience. People are going to, you know, we have a big Canadian audience. Don't hate me too much for that, but I'm not picking Bunting. I think what Moritz Seider did was massively impressive, way more impressive than Bunting, even though Bunting had a great season. I'm not taking that away from him, but I wouldn't have picked him. But I couldn't take him out of my top 5. I wanted to put Tanner Janot in there over him, but I think Tanner Janot is just on the outside looking in. The thing for I lost my train of thought a little bit, but oh, Zegras. I mean, Zegras too. Like, the kid is electric. He had to play a big role, and he did. He showed such great skill. His passing ability is up there already with the best in the league. The Michigan attempts and, you know, successful Michigan's in the past for him, and the friggin' flip over the net to Milano was insane. Just like absolutely popped off on the internet too. Like, that's a big thing with hockey these days. You want to grow the sport. You want these things to go viral. That's the type of shit that gets the game growing when kids are doing shit like that, especially when they're like 21 years old, like he is. Yep. 20. I think he's 20 still. Lucas Raymond didn't keep the momentum up all year that he started with, but overall, a pretty damn good rookie season, is already a very important player for them. So that's my top 5. Would you have been in the Seider camp as well? Or you said
probably, you know, I think I was one of those people that fell into the bunt, fell in love with Bunting, but like saw the production, saw it was Toronto, so maybe would have leaned. I think I leaned his way when we did the predictions early on. You convinced me on Seider. Seider, thank you. Zegras is another one though, kind of the same thing that like a discussion about the Norris. Like I feel like Zegras was a guy that may have caught a lot more attention as the season went on for all the reasons you said. So that maybe. I feel like I'm curious to see if maybe that would have helped him out a little bit more, but for all the mentions you reasoned with, or you said for Seider, like,
yeah,
it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. To me, you just have to go with a guy who has a rookie, put a bad defensive group on his back and make him somewhat serviceable.
Nope.
As much as he could, like he did what he could. He had a phenomenal season. It has to be him. Like it has to, he just had a crazy season. The Ted Lindsay is voted on by the players. They voted for Auston Matthews. Unsurprisingly, I would have thought it would have been McDavid because, again, most outstanding player. He'd say the guy who improved his defensive game massively and scored 60 goals for the first time since Steven Stamkos. Funny that Stamkos predicted that years back, too. Then Auston Matthews, but, like, the most outstanding player in hockey is Connor McDavid. Like, it just
night makes. In and night out, yeah.
You could have made the case, like, if you factored in everything with playoffs too. That was Kyle McCarr. Like,
yeah, that's a definite.
Well, Kyle McCarr is doing the playoffs now. Like, I know I'm going against the thing I've been talking about, the playoff performance. Kyle McCarr is like a top 3 player in the league. Mm-hmm. Like he has the chance to be the best defenseman ever. Like he just,
I think you can make a case for Shesterkin with the stats you rattled off as one of the best goalie seasons ever. Like that, yeah, I feel like that wouldn't absolutely be far fetched. Does the Ted Lindsay tend to follow the MVP though? Like, is that, I don't know. Do you know the voting history of like, yeah, a little okay. Bit. So I feel like that makes a little bit more sense than was why Matthews got it than than maybe McDavid. But I agree with you. I think McDavid night in and night out is the most electrifying, the best guy to watch. Like, it's just no question.
Yeah, but, you know, definitely Matthews has a great case. And
absolutely,
I just would have picked McDavid because Connor McDavid is just Connor McDavid. He's ridiculous. And he had the most points this year, so he won the Hart Ross. So that's pretty good. That helps his case.
Took home some hardware, yep.
Yeah, so, yeah, I would have went McDavid, Matthews, Shesterkin 3, Roman Josi 4, and Kale McCarr 5 for the Ted Lindsay. If I were to have voted, and the Vezina. The Vezina trophy, I would have went Igor Shesterkin. He won. He should have. I would have went Ilya Sorokin number 2 because he made good of what was a terrible team in front of him for the most part with the Islanders. He's that other of the two-headed monster Russian studs with Shesterkin. Sorokin is so good. They've figured things out again in front of him. He's going to be in the mix for the Vezina for a while. He's so good. He's just like, he's got this very like stern demeanor. Just looking at his stats, looking back, he did finish this year on a bad team. 26-18-8 is the most glamorous record, but it could have been a lot worse. A 240 goals against, a 925 and 7 shutouts, and that Islanders team is pretty ridiculous.
It's not bad, yeah.
I'm going Sorokin. I saw Connor Ryan had this too. He had him second, so shout out to him. I'm glad I'm not the only one. I think Sorokin did not get enough hype because the Islanders are boring and he's on that team. And they were bad, but he had a really fucking good season for how bad of a team they were. And he's going to be a stud for a long time. I just noticed when
Jacob Markstrom was so good or so nice, you had him twice.
What the fuck? I didn't even notice that.
You put him on there twice. He should have been your number one Vezina winner.
Not twice, but he did lead the league in shutouts. He was on that stud Calgary team. Really made a good first impression. You know, wasn't super sparkly in the playoffs, but Colorado, Landeskog looks
nice.
Like a rebound. 3 goals in the last 2 games. Chernak is not happy. Did Landeskog get the rebound though? Or let's see if he got a piece of that. It's squeaked through Vasilevsky. Jacob Markstrom, unreal. Great season for him. I would have had him 3. UC Saros at 4. Outside of Roman Josi, easily their most important player. Definitely hurt when they lost him in the playoffs, but they didn't have a chance against Colorado anyways, really. Played so much. Like, was relied on so heavily, partially because David Riddick was awful as the backup. And Connor Ingram saw some moments at times and looked pretty good, but, I mean, he's just not an established NHL backup yet as a young kid. Looks like the puck hit off McKinnon. So it looks like McKinnon's going to get credit for the goal.
As long as it's a good goal, works for me.
Yeah, works for me too. UC Saros. Like, UC Saros, in terms of, like, most important players to a team in the league is way up there. Like, way up there. He's becoming the backbone of that team outside of, you know, if Roman Josi wasn't there, he'd absolutely be it. But him and Josi carry that team. They do. Like, Saros is amazing. Such a good goalie. And Freddie Anderson, number 5. He had a really good first season in Carolina. Got out of that shitstorm that is Carolina with the media and all that and the fans and relished it. Unfortunately for him, you know, he didn't get to play in the playoffs this year. It's such a shame after a good season. But he deserves to be in my top 5. He had a really, really solid season, pretty consistently awesome season as well, too. Didn't, to my knowledge, have any like crazy droughts or anything. Had a pretty good season overall. So I would have had Anderson 5. I imagine you would have had Igor Shesterkin at the top of yours as well.
I would have. Just probably him 1, Markstrom 2, Saros 3 for the reasons you said that they pretty much rode him the entire season because they had to. Sorokin 4, Anderson 5.
Yeah,
Shesterkin just seems like, I don't know what the voting looked like. Sorry to cut you off, but I feel like Shesterkin probably won that one in the landslide. Like, there really shouldn't have been any question if, you know, anyone
was in. I don't think it was close.
Yeah, I can't imagine it was, like.
Yeah, I mean, it was cool. The BR Open Ice account tweeted the picture of Lundqvist, the Photoshop of Lundqvist, like, knighting him because he's the king.
That's pretty, pretty cool,
with his stick and handing him the Vezina, which was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Where is he? Nobody's looking for the breakdown here, but, yeah, I'm pretty sure, yeah, Shesterkin, here it is. Yeah, he got 29 of 32 first-place votes.
So pretty, yeah.
The other makes votes, sense. Freddie Anderson got one, Vasilevskiy got one, and Sorokin. It's kind of crazy not have Vasilevskiy in there, but I don't think it's like crazy outlandish. There was a lot of good goalies this year.
It falls into the same kind of discussion the Norris fell into. Like, you have so many good young goalies too that like you're starting to push other guys out.
Exactly. Yeah, it's pretty wild looking at Vasilevskiy now. Of course, again, doesn't factor in playoff stuff, but you know, he's Vasilevskiy, he's the big cat. So somebody did have Sorokin first though as well on the Norris ballot. So
there you go. That's interesting.
Why did I keep saying the Norris, dude? Like, I don't know why I keep saying that. But, there's some love for Sorokin out there. So, I understand. Be excited you have him because he can carry you if you put the right team in front of him. But, he got Sorokin. I just wanted to double check because I already exited out of it. Got a first, a second, and three thirds. So, shout out to him. Ilya Sorokin, the Russian goalies. Let's go back to the outline here. Stanley Cup Finals updates. We got, game four going on right now. Actually, I forgot the Bruins news. McAvoy makes the All-Star second team. Swayman makes the All-Rookie team. So that's awesome.
Rightfully deserved for both. Absolutely.
Rightfully deserved.
Did Tuukka Rask get a vote for one of those? I was going to ask you this earlier. I saw your tweet. I don't understand how that's even remotely possible.
Somebody did it as a joke.
Assume that.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was Ty Anderson.
Okay.
I wouldn't be surprised because he's like a big, he talks gets the about bottom of that. A lot. He gets other people's skins. He's, he's a big Tuukka guy and rightfully so. He brings a lot of facts to the table that people aren't ready for. I wouldn't have been surprised if it was him. Maybe someone random just threw that in for fun.
It's just like it's a gag. Gag answer.
I didn't have this in the outline. I must have forgot, but Riley Durant and Ty Gallagher are in the mix for World Junior Evaluation Camp for the U.S. national team, so that's pretty cool. That has been rescheduled to the summertime, as the World Juniors in the winter got interrupted due to COVID. They'll be in the mix, not counting on them making the team, but it's possible, but it's good to see them in the mix. It'll be a good experience for them, and it's a cool honor to have to be able to put on those USA colors. Durant and Gallagher, both of the 2021 draft class, Durant being a sixth rounder currently at Providence College, Ty Gallagher, a seventh rounder at BU. So a couple hockeyist guys as well. Congratulations to them. I'd love to see them play, but I'm just not counting on it. There's a stacked group up front competing for roster spots, including players that were already on the team prior, so they're probably going to make the team. But Matty Beniers will not be there, so that'll the one guy not in the mix is he signed with the Kraken now, but we'll see. It'll be a good experience even if they don't make it. But cool to see Riley Durant and Ty Gallagher in the mix as they, progress through the offseason and look forward to their sophomore seasons at their respective Hockey East institutions. Tampa smacked Colorado in the mouth in game three. Patrick Maroon looked like a first liner with that goal he scored, which was pretty weird. Corey Perry almost got hurt, but then he goes after and gives Kemper a little jab. And I thought this was funny, but apparently nobody else did. I put the meme out there of John Hamm. I put Corey Perry and Darcy Kemper in the meme, and apparently nobody thought it was funny. I thought it was funny because Darcy Kemper gets a little jab and he doesn't really react. It was pretty funny. Kucherov got hurt in that game, but he's playing tonight. Kadri is back for Colorado, so that's a huge boost.
It's a good addition for them, yep.
Yeah, if he can, look healthy out there and play good. And we saw a fight at the end of the game, which is fun.
Yeah, I was going to say, when was the last time you saw a legitimate, drop-your-gloves fight in Stanley Cup Finals? I feel like they kind of
– can't tell you.
Yeah, I feel like it's like hold off on that just so you don't take any stupid penalties. But I guess when there's only 2 minutes left, you can afford to take a 5-minute fighting major and it doesn't really matter in the end.
Yeah, I guess so. It was at the end of the game, a couple scrappy guys and Ross Colton and Logan O'Connor. Chris Blackie, friend of the show, says draft Kenobi, also Kenobi. So Kenobi.
It's just
definitely,
that.
Definitely period. Kenobi. What a final episode. Maybe final.
Maybe we'll see if they have turn the series around. Well, I told you, it was pretty freaking average up until
freaking out. We won't say spoilers though.
Nope. Luke Skywalker dies, for anybody that doesn't know.
Yeah, that
Reva goes, and
I hope everybody listening saw that headline of like, what it said, will Luke Skywalker die in the finale?
Yeah, will Kenobi kill off young Luke Skywalker? I thought it was fake. It's like, I thought it was like a made up, and then the like more the I onion? Saw it, I'm like, some
that wouldn't even be
like some idiot actually exactly, but some idiot actually just must have never watched Star Wars before, or just have lived under a rock for 50 plus years, however long Star Wars has been out for. Like,
bizarre. Like, but yeah, Kenobi. Yep. Yeah, I mean, it was good to see. He said, goddamn right in the chat.
I hope there's one person listening that's like, they fucking killed Luke Skywalker. Thanks a lot, assholes. Like, some just oblivious idiot that's like, I was going to watch that tonight and you ruined it for me. Nope.
Oh, man. But yeah.
Back said, on track.
He said, whoa, Sal, as a joke.
Yeah. So, sorry, spoilers.
Maybe,
I know.
Maybe we spoiled it. No, he's seen the episode.
My bad.
Yeah. So, Colorado, Tampa. Tampa, a little smack in the mouth. Back. The statement 6-2. Now it's a 1-1 game halfway through the second. I was feeling nervous about Tampa in six, but I'm not going to say they're going to win in six, but I'm at this rate kind of leaning towards Tampa winning.
Don't lean towards Tampa. Come on. Don't do it. Like I said earlier, I hope Colorado just doesn't prove pull another Rangers, or the Lightning pull another series with the Rangers and just says, here, have two, Colorado. Have your fun. Now I'm going to come out and beat you for four straight. Like,
I'll say this. I don't see it happening in six, like I said in the start. Like, if Tampa wins, it's going to be in seven, I think. With Colorado being the most talented team they've faced, I think Colorado will push it. But we'll see, because Tampa is, in fact, Tampa. So, yep. Going to be a fun series throughout the rest of it, however long it lasts. Chris is just going off.
More comments.
Yeah. He said Luke, and then he said Sal Nobi, ? Don't know about that, but doesn't roll off the tongue. Not one of your best.
I got the robe. The robe is somewhere around here. I don't know. I'm not going to put it on, though. It's too hot.
Speaking of Tampa.
No, they go up 2-1.
Victor Hedman. Shit. I'm telling you, dude. I can't bet against
them. Oh, I hate them so much. They make me so angry.
I can't do it. Let's see. Victor Hedman pass. Takes it to the neutral zone. Practically untouched. Backhander. Oh, yeah. You just got to play better defense than that. But Jack Johnson was on the ice, and he is bad.
So that explains it.
Surprised that he got walked. Poor Kel McCarr, opposite side of the ice, just getting in position, trying to, just watching. He's
sad he got walked by another defenseman.
He gave a look like this when he was skating away on the replays.
Oops, my bad. Yeah,
no, like not him. Like, that's who I was out with. Like, sucks.
Yep, that's what's gonna happen.
Facts suck. Like, I don't know if he meant to do that, but that's what I kind of picked it up as. Tampa, dude, I don't know. I'm still sticking with Tampa winning the series. I'm still sticking with Tampa winning the series, but I'm with you. I really, really hope I'm wrong. I said it last
time. I said this the other day. I wouldn't mind Tampa, but I would mind, but I wouldn't care as much if them winning didn't mean Patrick Maroon winning a fourth Stanley Cup. I think I said that too when we started I hate that so much. Like, that guy can have one and just go away. Like, I don't want to see you win four in a row.
Yeah, Newhook sucks as a BC guy. I kind of walked a little bit there, too. Not the best defense, but Sal Walk, king of the Ewoks. All right, Chris.
You don't like that either. We got
I got a picture of a painting of Wicket in my room. So, shout out to the Ewoks. But, oh, man. Chris is going bananas in the chat. Some head coaching news before we wrap up. Not a whole lot since the whole thing from Fluto came out of Dan Quinn and Jay Leach being amongst the David Quinn. And I don't know why
I put that's my mistake. I put Dan Quinn for some reason.
Okay.
Yep. I will leave the hockey stuff to you. That's what I get for trying to fill out. Yeah. Trying to fill out the hockey section. Help a guy out. Wrong.
Close enough.
Yep.
Yeah. Dave Quinn. I mean, still not
Dan Quinn would not be a good Bruins coach.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
No.
Jay Leach would prefer it. Pierre DeBoer, don't think he was really ever super linked to the Bruins. I hope not, because I wouldn't have liked it. Hired as the coach of the Dallas Stars, don't really like that move for them, but I think it could work out. But I don't know. Kind of seems like he lost Vegas a little bit. Didn't even mean for that to be a pun, but it ended up being one. All right, I will, Chris. I'll do it. He wants a picture of you on an Ewok. I can make that.
As soon as you said you had a picture of an Ewok, I'm like, I hope there's no one gets an idea of a Photoshop or something. That's not going to happen.
Let's not do that. Photoshop. I'll do it. I'll do it. It's fine. All right.
I don't think I will. It will haunt me for the rest of my dreams.
Not really much has changed. We're kind of the same boat as last week, so if you want to hear our thoughts on that, give last week's episode a listen if you haven't already. Paul Maurice to Florida would have been like an outside shot of the Bruins, but I never really like expected it. I did throw out a poll out a few weeks ago, but never really expected Paul Maurice to be in the mix. Kind of snuck into the Florida mix and is replacing Andrew Brunette, so we'll see what happens with Andrew Brunette. Maybe he enters the Bruins coaching search mix, but I don't know what they think of him. But we'll see what happens. There's not a whole lot to report from last week in terms of updates on that. So we'll see. Don Sweeney still doesn't have a contract. So, yeah.
I saw a tweet today. When's the NHL draft? It's coming up, isn't it?
July 7th and 8th.
Okay, so it's fairly right around the corner, and the fact that they don't have a coach, they don't have a GM who is going to, and I'm sure that at least you have to think the GM, not search, because I feel like at this point Don Sweeney's coming back. You would have to think before the draft he's going to have a contract, but like, it's just weird to me that the draft is right around the corner and you have really shown nothing when it comes to making any sort of leeway or headway with the GM contract or any sort of decisions on a head coaching position. Like, it just seems like they're like asleep at the wheel right now. And like, again, it just goes back to how infuriating this offseason is most likely going to be, because it just looks like it's heading in that direction. So like, I just don't get the decision-making and just the lack of urgency that this team is seeming to deal with. It just makes no sense to me.
Yeah. I think they just know they have to nail it.
Well, they're not setting a good tone if that's the case right out of the gates. Like,
maybe they're overthinking the coaching search a little bit. Maybe they're just trying to be precise. The whole Sweeney thing makes no sense, because like, I imagine any coaching candidate they're talking to knows that Sweeney is going to have a contract and would have that assurance. But like, why haven't we got it? Like, it's just really stupid. But I'm really not surprised. I'm just not.
Whenever game 7 of the cup finals is, if it goes game 7 or whenever the clinching game is, I think you and I've joked about this with you before, that's when they'll announce at least the Sweeney signing. Is they'll try to undercut the cup finals, whoever wins that, and be like, hey, we brought Don Sweeney back. Everyone get hyped.
Imagine if they used the Gronk retirement announcement.
Oh, it's just it's right up their alley. Like, some sort of I'm shocked still. We haven't gotten anything.
We didn't even talk about the Gronk stuff, because he's going to come back.
He's not retired, because that's exactly right, because he's not retired.
Like, he's taken up in like weeks 8 to 10 and be like, hey, dude,
yep,
come back. And be like, okay.
Nope. Like, come back. We'll play you like two games.
A lot to the Bucks. Like, I love the Bucks Nation, and put out another paragraph. And then if Brady comes back and wants it back again, 4 months. He'll do it again. Like, I don't know. I'll believe Gronk is done when he gets like this like major movie gig or something.
Yes, he's doing something else. Exactly.
I threw this out to a coworker. They need to make another Jump Street movie and put him in it with Channing Tatum, because that would
work so well.
That would be
so awesome. Cheesy,
awesome,
and dumb. It would work so well.
I would see that multiple times if it was good.
Nope.
Because
he fits the bill for that type of movie, 100%.
Perfect for him.
Yep.
I think that's going to wrap it up. Episode 100. On to the 100s and beyond. Until we
hit like graphics, 1,000. Fireworks, and shit.
And years from now, we'll hit episode 1,000 when we're like, I don't even know how old we'd be.
Someone do the math. Chris, do the math for us.
I don't want to do the math.
No.
It's just kind of terrifying to think about. But episode 100, the listenership, as usual, has been crazy. The numbers have been so overwhelming, and we appreciate it so much. again with the Canadian audience. I hope you're not too mad about me about my bunting take, but maybe a lot of the Canadian people will like it if they're not Maple Leafs fans. So we'll see. Thank you so much for listening. You can listen to us pretty much wherever you get your podcasts. Odds are, if you listen somewhere, it'll be there. So go check that out. You can give us a rating on Apple Podcasts. You can rate us 5 stars on Spotify. You can check out the Full Press Coverage YouTube and Twitch. Apparently, the YouTube was having some technical difficulties. Don't know how that ended up going.
No.
It's okay. It's not our fault. Just probably
for
just
once, the technical difficulties don't necessarily affect us.
But nope. It's okay. It's all right. Luckily, there are other ways to watch it, Twitch and Twitter. So that's good. Check out all the other Full Press Coverage content on the Full Press Coverage app and on Twitter as well. Definitely go do that. Yeah, we'll see you next week. Episode 101. I will be in my new apartment, which will be exciting. Nice. Very excited to not have to spend 3 hours on the road every day. So
that sucks. No, thank you.
But I'm just so addicted to the grind that it doesn't matter. So it does at times, though, because I do get pissed on the road. But it's okay. You know, it's reasonable. Bear with me here. I've kept my sanity.
It doesn't matter, except for those times when it does.
I've kept my sanity somewhat intact, which is pretty remarkable. I'm going to give myself a pat on the back. So,
all right. Well deserved.
Episode 101 next week. We'll see you then from my glorious new apartment. Stay safe, stay healthy, be nice to people, and all that good stuff. And we'll talk to you then. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week. Bye.